missed out on something. And I hope if they haven't, that they'll be there this time around. David, take care and have a wonderful Labor Day weekend.
Hi, Shell. You too.
All right. Bye now.
Thanks, Bob. Bye.
Bye. Make a point. Make a point of being there this Saturday evening, 9 p.m. Eastern for Night Sounds. Yes, Agnes?
Actually, it's Tune In to Night Sounds, Saturday night at 9 p.m. to midnight Eastern Time, for new music, sounds of the 80s, one-hit wonders, dedications, and something new, a smooth jazz segment.
Well, I was ad-libbing, dear.
I'm reading verbatim from Billy.
You do that,
dear. Nah, so at least, you know, mine's correct.
Yeah, okay, well, I wasn't exactly wrong. It's at 9 o'clock Saturday night. Goes to midnight, gets repeated on the stream.
And
if you've got dedications, Billy takes dedications too, but I'm going to make you listen to the show to get the email address where you can send your dedications in. Yeah. Let's talk to Preston calling from Denver. Hey, Preston, welcome to the program. Oh.
Sorry about that.
Are you there, Preston?
Hey, Bob.
How are you?
I'm doing pretty good. How are you?
I'm okay. The night's kind of flying along here.
Yeah. Well, I was just telling Agnes that I was happy to have a long weekend coming here.
We're going to have a long weekend too. I was asked about that earlier today. We're not. Thanks for opening the door on that one, Preston. We're not going to have any live programming Monday. But we're going to take the holiday too.
Enjoy the rest and relaxation. Also, I was wondering, Gene was speaking about an article he had posted.
Uh huh.
Did he post that to, is it your message board or a blog?
No, it's the blog at headonradionetwork.com.
Okay.
It was the story of, the story of the Iowa gay marriage court ruling.
Okay. I haven't caught up with a lot of the blogs, but I'll have to check that out.
I've been slow to really get into the blogging thing, too. I've found a few that I really like. I like Welcome to Pottersville. And I also like the Maha blog we discussed a couple of nights ago. I had a very nice email exchange with the author of the Maha blog. And I've gone back a couple of times, and the writing there continues to be well above average, as is the readership. So it makes it a real joy to read.
Yeah. I visit message boards a fair amount of time, and I enjoy the interaction of a lot of those. But anyway, I wonder, I'm sure you noticed that Ed Schultz and Tom Hartman were on C-SPAN this week.
No, actually, I didn't. I'm television deprived at this point. I seldom see it. Is that coming up this weekend?
Actually, it was this past week.
No.
Hartman was on today, and Ed Schultz was on either Tuesday or Wednesday, and I don't have cable, actually, so I didn't catch it. But they mentioned it while they were on the air, and they also mentioned how many new listeners they were getting, and they were getting a lot of callers from different parts of the country. So it was cool to see, and they got a lot of positive feedback.
You've got Internet access, Preston. It might be worth your time to go. It's c-span.org. I'm sure you can watch the video there at your leisure.
Yeah. In fact, I visited their website just today after I got back from work, and I dropped them an email, and I suggested that, you know, there's some other progressive talk radio that they might want to bring people's awareness to, and I left a link to your the Head On Radio Network.
No, not me in front of a camera. The horror.
I'm sorry. Maybe I shouldn't have bent that forward.
Well, no. I'm playing. I mean, for heaven's sakes, Preston, if Ed Schultz can get in front of a camera,
you know, he did a great job.
What I'm getting at. Yeah, I'm no beauty queen. He's no beauty queen. So
yeah. Okay, but anyway, who knows? You may be on C-SPAN one of these days, and that would be great to see.
I'd love that. I think that'd be a blast.
The whole country would enjoy it. This conversation radio that you've pioneered here, it's really something great. Also wanted to mention an earlier caller's remarks about people going into the profession of news, the news business. you know, I was thinking maybe part of the problem, at least in some cases, is when people do go to journalism school and they kind of learn a particular way of comporting themselves in the profession and strange definitions of objectivity and
sort of like back in the day, if you went to school at, say, Vanderbilt and studied English, you'd come out writing like Alan Tate and John Crow Ransom and Robert Penn Warren. Is that what you mean?
Right.
Where the faculty sort of imprints its style on the.
Definitely.
Okay.
Same with so many fields. I mean, anthropology and history. And if we look back to some of this stuff, it's so incredibly...
Terry Commissions Act, or the summer recess, like they did with this...
And there are certainly people fighting it now. And there are some journalist professors like Robert McChesney.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's at the University of Wisconsin. He's doing all kinds of great work. Has helped develop something of an alternative press movement. And he helped organize that conference that takes place in Tennessee each year. And they had like 3,500 people talking about the free press movement. So,
oh, is that conference down in, what was it, in Memphis, I think it was, this past January maybe? Was that
that? Yes.
Okay. One of these days I'm going to get to go to those things, Preston. I don't mean to sit here and just, you know, it's not like I'm putting on my running shoes trying to get away from Agnes or anything, but I want the horn to be part of those things because your kind words, you know, tell me that there is a little bit of a difference in what we're trying to accomplish here.
Yeah.
And I think it would be kind of fun to take it and show it to other people. Let them see how it works. Let them see how it happens. And you know, I'm not going to sue anybody if they go out and try to replicate what we're doing. I want more of this to happen.
Right. That's great.
I'd like it a lot if I could earn a living doing this. But as far as being an American is concerned, and being committed to the idea that we will find solutions if we only talk it out a little bit more. I want to hear more of it,
yep.
Not less of it.
Yep. And, I'd like to see the form develop in other places, too, and it's good that we don't try to, you know, patent these things as our own and, you know, get into the whole competition thing. But, definitely, if you were to get, like, a little booth even at that kind of convention, I mean, the networking that could be done would be a lot of fun, I believe.
Oh, yeah.
And, but again, also, I think it was Susan who was talking about the issue of journalism and education of the kids.
That might have been Kate, I think.
Kate.
Okay. Kind of standing up and saying, don't blame them, nobody taught them civics.
Yeah, and it's an important part of the story. You know, I mean, there are moments where we can feel some resentment, and there's conscious selling out going on and other stuff that's not very commendable. But at the same time, there is that element of, you know, how we're being raised in this society, how we're being manipulated and coerced. And I found another book that I wanted to mention that deals with that subject. It's by a person named Alex Molnar,
mm-hmm.
And he wrote Giving Kids the Business, the Commercialization of America's Schools. And it's about... how people are seeking to turn our public schools into the captives of the private sector. And
with like that, what's that, TV One? Is that the captive cable channel where they force-feed children commercials for an hour every morning?
That's right. That's one example of it. The billboards on the sides of school buses now, the billboards at the stadiums for Pepsi. No less. You know, products like Pepsi that aren't even good for our children physically. On top of the manipulations, the emotional and psychic manipulations they do so oftentimes in their marketing, they encourage them to drink this poison, basically. I mean, you know, all this sugar and, you know, we've got diabetes and epidemic going on. You know, Who are the drug pushers on our school grounds?
No kidding. Coca-Cola, perhaps? Pepsi? Mountain Dew? Anyone?
McDonald's moving franchises into these schools? Because you got to cut the budget, because that would be socialism to pay for it. Instead, you got to send the money to these corporate executives instead, so they can walk off at $1 billion. And
see, Preston, this is it's a double-edged sword, and it's a win-win situation for the right wing, because on the one hand, if they can kill the public schools outright, and you've got freaks like Neil Bortz, who doesn't, you know, his shtick is that he doesn't call them the public schools. He says, your children are going to government schools, and he makes it sound like Soviet Russia.
Right.
So on the one hand, they would like to kill it outright. I remember, I'm not sure, it may still be a plank in the Republican National Committee platform calling for the outright elimination of the United States Department of Education. So they want to kill schools outright.
Yeah.
Barring that, if they can't do that, they want to corporatize the schools.
Yeah.
Because either way, they've got a greater opportunity to to shape and to create the curriculum.
Right. To limit the discussions, to direct the educational moments in particular ways with particular methods. These tests, I mean, they're such a manipulation and such an expense and such a, you know, I think it's a Bush relative, actually, I believe.
It's Neil.
Money off of selling these tests.
Yeah, it's Neil, and he's hustled them in Florida, he's hustled them in Texas, and he's even hustled them in, I think, Dubai. He's got little Dubai children sitting down taking standardized tests now. And, you know, until recently, we had 4 kids in the public school system. Now we've got 3 kids in the public school system. And, Preston, when that stinking standardized test comes around every spring, I know it before I hear about it. Because our kids will start getting nervous, they'll start getting jumpy, they'll start getting sick at their stomachs. I mean, we have literally sent them out the door on test day throwing up.
Yep, and it's making them nervous and jumpy, and the teachers and the administrators. You know, again, this is psychological warfare on top of the, you know, through these financial games and threats of closing the schools if they don't, you know, perform at the right level. And, you know, it's interesting, too, how, you know, they talk about how they hate government schools. You know, they're the government, and they're the government school in many ways with what they're doing and what the policies they're crafting. But they pretend to be so against it, yet they're very much a part of it. There are particular types of government schools they can't stand. When teachers and parents and children are working together more cooperatively, they're addressing, you know, multiple intelligences and multiple, you know, backgrounds in different ways. My sister's a public school teacher in Omaha, and the stress, and she's like, you know, they're designing this to fail. And you know, she'll get students who don't speak any English, and she's demanded that they're given this standardized test. And if the kid does poorly, well, that's a big drag because, you know, they lose some of your money, might have to close school, and they're expecting something else other than failure from a child that doesn't know any English. Maybe Spanish, maybe an indigenous language, Quechua or something.
Yeah.
It might be an African language. You know, they're coming from all over, and there's no...
It might be Czech. You know, right. For all of Tom Tancredo's hollering about the Mexicans... a huge percentage of the so-called undocumented aliens in this country didn't come from south of the border. They came from east of the Atlantic.
Great point. Great point. And Russia?
Yeah.
Definitely. All over.
You know, George Bush showed up at that charter school, the Martin Luther King Jr. Charter School in the lower Ninth Ward in New Orleans a couple of days ago, and literally there was one book on the shelf of the library. One book. And are you familiar, Preston, with how these charter schools are set up?
Somewhat. I think the ones that are still public, but
they're corporatized.
Okay. You know, I think it's a mix. You know, some are that form of it, and some charter schools are doing really cool stuff. I was just reading about some in some of the Latin American sections of Denver. and they're doing some interesting things despite all the, you know, hassles of the system. But yeah, so it's a battle. I mean, there are openings, but it's a battle for sure. To get the kind of schools we want, the educations we want, the professions that we want. And back on the immigrant thing, it's interesting. I heard Mitt Romney talking about how we got to end the sanctuary city policy.
Mm-hmm.
Tancredo pushes that a lot. We have a local talk show host, Peter Boyles, who pushes that a lot. Many. And it's framed, the discussion is framed in a way to create hostility and resentment between working class people, between races and so forth.
Yeah, because the guy who's the white guy who's making $9 an hour does not have an issue with the brown guy making $9 an hour. They both have an issue with the white guy who is making $900 an hour.
Right.
But Tancredo and Romney and this crowd that you just mentioned, they are their stock in trade is creating division where no division exists.
Right. And the white guy also wouldn't have a problem with the brown guy making efforts to raise the wages in various professions. For instance, in hotel work or recently in New York City, some bike delivery people for a restaurant called the Little Saigon went on strike, and they stopped doing deliveries, and then the owners had to kind of scramble to try to get replacements, and then bike messengers and other companies started to make these deliveries. I mean, there was like a strike.
God, I love it when I hear about things like that developing on an organic basis.
Yep, and it was a whole mix of different nationalities, just like what you were saying. Interesting thing is, I was reading on in this article, and I got this from an email from a group called Immigrant Solidarity. I'm always receiving very interesting material from them, from a wide range of sources. But something to note about this strike and this article, it said, labor across the country it lost another million members over the past 8 years or so. But this segment of labor, both documented and undocumented immigrants, is the only place where labor has made gains. They've added 400,000 members over the past 8 years. And a lot of it is concentrated in cities. Why? Because they have protections that police cannot ask on their immigration status during political protests or labor rights gathering.
Yeah, because, frankly, the authorities should not be able to use an inquiry like that to stifle a more fundamental right, you know, to wit, to peaceably assemble and to speak freely. Because there's nothing in the First Amendment that says, and frankly, if you go and read Madison in the Federalist Papers, there's nothing in the Bill of Rights that suggests that those rights, and in fact there are statements made directly to the contrary by people like Jefferson, that those rights are to apply to everyone. Because the framers saw the Bill of Rights as a template for what we would like to see the world have. Because these are rights appertaining unto human beings, not rights appertaining unto Americans.
That's right. I mean, that line isn't all U.S. men are created equal.
Right, precisely. Yeah. But you know, it's a sad commentary on the nature or the ability of the right wing to get their message out, as opposed to a rational message such as you and I are talking about. They stand up and they look at the cameras and speak into the microphones, Preston, and they say, "Well, who in their right mind would think that the Constitution applies to a non-American?" Who in their right mind wouldn't, Preston?
Right. Right. So just to tie up the Sanctuary City comment, that protection that they do have right now has enabled people to do this important organizing work. That is what's being defined as one of the, that element, that's why there's this anti-sanctuary city movement going on. That's why Mitt Romney is saying this has to be destroyed. And what he's saying is that we have to take away those protections. And I'm sure you saw that, but I just want to underscore that this sanctuary city that people are being manipulated to be against is essentially a method through which they're going to be against their fellow workers and their opportunities to raise wages. You know, they keep saying they drag down wages. Well, yeah, but in these instances, they're trying to push up wages and they're trying to create benefits. And if there's ever solidarity, that will be achieved. Their goal, their key, they have to divide us. So, solidarity. You know, there's actually, and some people, you know, we get cynical and, you know, there's confusion and underfunding and all that stuff going on. We do have an International Workers Association right now, which has been the Postal Service Association, another facet of our society that they're trying to make captive to the private sector. You know, they're making inroads all the time into privatizing the post office and taking away benefits for the workers. And a privatized post office has a lot of issues politically as well. For, you know, accountability and transparency issues and
constitutional issues. You know, do you have privacy rights under a privatized post office, Preston?
Right.
Or can the corporation do as it pleases, as AT&T and Verizon and the other big telecoms did?
Yeah. I've noticed recently the stamps, more recently, have been more corporate-related. Like, in the past, it tended to be more like writers and important political figures from both sides of the political spectrum. Everybody from, like, Ayn Rand to Malcolm X. But lately, there's been a lot of, like, Disney products and movies.
Big Bird.
Wars. Yeah. And I'm not totally against that. I think some of that stuff can be fun and enjoyable. But, again, balance, you know.
Right.
In so many things.
But. Well, Preston, I really appreciate the time you've taken to call in. And you know, I love the fact that you get the conversation radio idea. And thanks for dropping that note to C-SPAN. Maybe, you know, maybe that'll fall into the hands of the one little old lady clerk in the fairy godmother department, and something good will come of it.
You know, it's a long shot, but some of the best causes usually are. So.
Yeah, I'm a long shot kind of guy, Preston.
There you go.
You have a wonderful Labor Day weekend.
You do the same.
Take Bye. Care. Bye now. Let's go to David calling from Maine. Hey, David, welcome to the program. Thanks for calling.
I bring bad news, good news, silly news, and stupid news.
Oh, dear God. Let's take the bad first.
The bad news?
Yeah, let's get it. Because I want to end on stupid.
Okay. Well, the bad news is I don't know if you did you catch the Juan Cole blog that he said? He just gave us the heads up.
No.
The Iran rollout starts next week. I'll read.
Well, okay. That. Yeah, I did sort of catch that. I caught another blogger referring to it.
Yeah. Well, this is what Juan Cole has to say about it. This year on August 28th. President Bush spoke to another veterans group. He called Iran the world's leading state sponsor of terrorism. Iran's actions threaten the security of nations everywhere, and that is why the United States is rallying friends and allies around the world to isolate the regime to impose economic sanctions. But this apparently is just test marketing, like Cheney's 2002 speech. After all, from a marketing point of view, you don't introduce new products in August. Today I received a message from a friend who has excellent connections in Washington, and whose information has often been prescient. According to this report, as in 2002, the rollout will start after Labor Day with a big kickoff on September 11th. My friend has spoken to someone in one of the leading neoconservative institutions. He summarized what he was told this way. They, the sources institution, have instructions, yes, that was the word used, from the office of the vice president to roll out a campaign for war with Iran in the next week after Labor Day. It will be coordinated with the American Enterprise Institute, the Wall Street Journal, the Weekly Standard, Commentary, Fox, and the usual suspects. It will be a heavy, sustained assault on the airwaves designed to knock public sentiment into a position from which a war can be maintained. Evidently, they don't think they'll ever get majority support for this. They want something like 35 to 40% support, which in their book is plenty. Of course, I cannot verify this report. Beside all the other pieces of information about this circulating, I heard last week from a former U.S. government contractor. According to this friend, someone in the Department of Defense called asking for cost estimates for a model for reconstruction in Asia. The former contractor finally concluded that the model was intended for Iran. This anecdote is also inconclusive, but it is consistent with the depth of planning that went into the reconstruction effort in Iraq and Afghanistan.
Yeah, this was the stuff that I Chris Floyd at Empire Burlesque had cited and quoted some of that very self-same Juan Cole post in an article that I opened the show with last night. I so desperately want this not to be true. My rational mind says it probably is.
The one thing that we can learn from if they do a startup of this war is that we should have, and we should have, could have, would have is so subjective, but should have, could have, would have, we should have ran bills like this where we would have called the networks way ahead of time and basically threatened them, said, you know what? We're not going to watch your programs. That's the best threat you can do.
You know what?
We're not going to watch your programs.
You know what cued me into what may be the truth of this whole thing, David? It is that it's that passage that you just shared where it says they don't want national approval. What they want is something like 30%.
Yeah.
Okay. Think about it for just a minute. What are George Bush's numbers right now?
30%. 40.
32.
Under 40.
32.
Yeah.
In other words, if they can get the knuckle walkers and the mouth breathers and the fundamentalists, in other words, the last few people that still support this murderous bastard, if they can get that group to support bombing the snot out of Iran and murdering little children in their cribs, if they can do that, they figure that they've got enough to keep them afloat, because they know what thugs these right-wingers and these religious fundamentalists behave like. They know how they shout down the opposition. They know how easily they go to the, they play the un-American card, or question your patriotism, or question your right to live in this country. That, what they're talking about when they say 30%, and it's the 30% that they have now,
right?
What they're talking about is enough people to keep us from demanding that these criminals be removed from office.
You know, just a footnote to that, I think what we can learn from this is I don't have any faith in my in the people on the Hill. I just don't. I don't think they listen to you. I think they just throw the messages in the trash. That's what I believe. I know Hartman believes otherwise, but we're all entitled to our opinions, right? I just believe that they throw everything in the trash and they don't really have any time for the peons that are calling from wherever, the Midwest, the East, the West, the South, wherever, Middle America, basically.
Well, I do know this much. Whenever I send a letter, and it is quite frequently, to any of my elected representatives, in about 2 weeks' time, I will get a written response. Sometimes it's more detailed than others, quite frankly, although I disagree with him on several issues. I always get a response from Jay Rockefeller's office that sounds like he has somebody on his staff has actually A, read the letter, and B, responded to it point by point, because I've put them side by side and they're point by point responses. So I don't know. I'm a little bit more optimistic than you. The question is, when a progressive like me writes to a centrist, semi-slightly right winger like Rockefeller, and they respond, that's nice, but, you know, does it affect the way they think at all? And the question, the analysis you have to go through to do that, David, is to ask yourself, how many others like me are writing something similar to me? You know, I'm not talking about word for word, and I'm not talking about just send, because I think it's just completely disingenuous to send out one of those electronic, one of those emails that says, you know, sign the petition now or send this letter to your congressman.
Right,
because when they
right.
see the same thing 9,000 times over, they have an intellectual right to just toss it. So, you know, I always encourage people to use their own words, take their own time.
Yeah.
And when you build that intellectual weight of a number of people saying the same thing only differently, then the people in the office, you know, they at some point they go to him and they go, boss, you know, we're getting a lot of people saying the same thing. I mean, we saw an example of that during the Alito confirmation hearings, David, when the Senator Byrd made that dumbass speech about how he'd gotten a lot of left letters from all over West Virginia saying the same thing only differently, and some of them had coffee cup stains on them and donut sugar. And it was an orchestrated campaign by the right-wing religion industry to get that fascist monster onto the Supreme Court.
Well, you know, Bob, the more and more I think about it is, honestly, we need to take the grassroots Howard and Dean approach to phone banking all the news networks. We should have set up a progressive phone. Some Democratic committee should have done this, whether it was Move On or something. They should have set up progressive phone banks, just threaten the hell out of these networks. Just say, we're not going to be watching any of your programming, one after the other, Bob. Like, boom, boom, boom. I mean, we tried to scare the pimps, the people on Congress on the Hill. Now it's time to scare the whores, you see?
God, I love it. Yeah, every now and then you reach out there and you just pull out a gem, and that's it. We tried to scare the pimps, and now it's trying to... Oh, that's good.
Yeah.
That's good.
The second thing I wanted to mention is the Weekly Standard has come out against Tim Robbins and Brian De Palma. Surprise!
No, really?
And this op-ed is what this is what I call the stupid news.
Okay.
It says... Tim Robbins said this. This is what got him in hot water, supposedly. But, I mean, I've heard this so many times from Tim Robbins that, I mean, what he's saying is true anyways. We've killed over 400,000 of their citizens. That's what actor Tim Robbins thinks U.S. troops have been doing in Iraq. He made the claim last week in an appearance on HBO's Real Time with Bill Maher. He's wrong, of course. American soldiers have not been slaughtering 300 Iraqis a day for the last 4 years. Even for one of Hollywood's most feculent personalities, this is an appalling slander of U.S. troops. And then he goes on and says, just as we were inclined to dismiss Robbins as a lonely voice of idiocy, news came of director Brian De Palma's Redacted, one of 8 new movies about the Iraq War due out in the coming months, according to Reuters, inspired by one of the most serious crimes committed by American soldiers in Iraq since the 2003 invasion. It is a harrowing indictment of the conflict in and spares the audience no brutality to get its message across. And then I love how they end it. They say, how about the reality of what's happening in Hollywood, says Pete Hagseth of Vets for Freedom. These statements reflect the utter ignorance of Robbins and De Palma about what American soldiers are actually doing in Iraq. At every opportunity, they use their celebrity status to bash the very soldiers and Marines.
Well,
David,
this is the same thing as John Kerry screwing up the punchline to the joke, and you get this national orgy of John Kerry hates the troops. It's a deliberate miscasting of what's being said. You know, I don't think Tim Robbins is saying that, you know, we're out there just, you know, randomly slaughtering people. But no, you know what? Bombs dropped from planes from 40,000 feet have killed 400,000 plus Iraqi civilians. But you know what? Every terror, so-called terrorist bomb that goes off by every mosque that's not done by a U.S. soldier is done by the United States because it wasn't happening before we went in, and these freaks can't understand that.
And now for the, I would just say in passing, but Bob, Pete Hagseth of Vets for Freedom told us otherwise.
Well, I'm glad that Pete Hagseth from Vets for Freedom.
I know,
yeah,
but
his
organization is called Vets for Freedom, so it means he has to be telling the truth.
Well, of course,
for freedom,
yeah, right? Yeah, I mean, you know, he couldn't be any more truthy if he was a member of Vets for Little Babies holding ice cream cones while petting squirrels.
And now we go on to the silly news.
Okay.
I like I said, I'm leaving the good news for last.
Okay.
The silly news is NBC has pulled everything from iTunes. These idiots, they pulled everything. Guess why, Bob?
Because they couldn't.
They pulled everything.
They could not reach a what would the press release word be? A mutually satisfactory marketing agreement with Apple.
$1.99 wasn't enough to download. They wanted $4.99 per show. Can you believe that?
No. They wanted $4.99 for what? Leno?
$4.99 for downloads of all their. Someone put it best. They said, what was the show? Adam 54. They said they want reruns of Adam 54 or something.
Adam 12?
Adam 12, yeah.
Yeah, you're showing your age or lack thereof, David.
Yeah.
One Adam 12. See the lady. One Adam 12.
Yeah. I just have to say this. I mean,
I gotta tell you, I'm glad to see NBC gone from iTunes. You know why?
Yeah, why?
Because somehow or another, I hope that maybe that means more people will come to the horn. Because we're not even charging 12.5 cents. You know, we're just doing it for free.
I mean, the gall of NBC, $4.99 for a program. What the hell is going on? I mean, it's like it's 40 minutes. You want to charge 40 minutes for $4.99? Who the hell would do that? Someone in stupid yuppie town or something? Yuppieville?
I don't know. Maybe if I find out that there's, you know, one particular installment of Adam 12 that from 1969 that, you know, I just have to see. Maybe.
They're going to charge $4.99 for Sequest?
Oh, wait, let's see. ABC had Cops the Musical, right? So we don't have to worry
had,
about
that. Yeah, the Cops Musical, Cop Rock. Right?
Yeah, Cop Rock. We don't have to worry about that at least.
Yeah.
See, I used to watch TV once upon a time. Just not anymore. I know Cop Rock and I know Adam 12 and, you know, Dragnet and stuff. But I couldn't tell you what the fall lineup's going to be.
Hmm.
Let's see. Is it TBS or TNT has the Bill Engvall show coming up? Jesus God.
I got to tell you, Bob, Heroes is the best thing NBC has had on in the last past 10 years. I don't care what anyone says. I mean, the writers and just the subject matter. It's definitely. I mean, Bob, you got to start watching it. Watch one episode every week or something.
I'll try, but you know, even fighting my way through to the television is, I mean, it's what I'm saying, there's three kids and two young adults and a baby, and I'm figuring I got to go to a bar somewhere tomorrow to watch the Mountaineer game. Okay, I mean it's just, you know.
I'll just send you Heroes via your email anyway.
Okay, well, that's cool. David, good talking to you, my friend. Enjoy your Labor Day weekend.
Oh, yeah, enjoy your Russian director's cut of Solaris.
I can't wait to watch that.
For everyone else, go check it out. It's an amazing movie.
Subtitles?
Yep, it's already subtitled. It's director's cut and it's all set, all ready to go.
Cool. I prefer subtitles to dubbing. The dubbing makes me crazy.
Yeah, the dubbing will always drive you crazy.
Yeah, I remember watching, the rolling over tiger, boring dragon, or whatever it was, and the mouth would keep moving, and the woman would say, "I will write your name," and just didn't work for me.
Except, Bob, one last thing, except the dubbing of Hercules Goes Bananas with Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Okay, for that we'll take dubbing.
That gets a pass. Later.
Bye.
Bye.
our pop culture correspondent, David from Maine. Agnes, do you want break? Okay, Agnes wants a break. We're going to come back, and I'm just going to take it downhill with a few stories that we're just going to do, you know, sort of a machine gun, shotgun blast, as it were, of stuff to catch up on, and. And then the next thing you know, we'll be on the Labor Day weekend. It gets even hinkier because we won't have any programming Monday. Tuesday, Agnes and I have to be in Morgantown at the doctor's again. So that's a 350-mile round trip. I don't know if I'm going to be... I know she won't be up to doing a show. I don't know if I will be. But I'm hoping... at the very least, that on Tuesday, I'll crawl in behind the microphone and I'll make sure that as long as Peter's up for it, there'll be a strictly confidential program as well. Assuming we make it back in time, which I trust we will. So we'll take a quick break and we'll come back and take it on downhill to the holiday weekend. You're listening to America's liberal voice. You're listening to Conversation Radio. You're listening to The Horn, and I'm Bob.
Has given us all a unique glimpse at education the way it ought to be. Never once do Harry and his Hogwarts friends talk about skipping class, ducking tough instructors, waiving requirements, or shirking responsibilities. That perspective, be practical, get it the easiest, fastest, cheapest way you can, is what J.K. Rowling terms the Muggle approach to education. We're Concord University, and do we have a deal for you? At Concord, education's different than anywhere else around. There's a reason that Concord students get the best jobs, are sought out by the best medical, graduate, and law schools in the land. It's no wonder that Concord has been cited by U.S. News & World Report and by the Wall Street Journal. Where do I sign up? At Southern West Virginia's version of Track 9 and 3 Quarters. All you have to do is believe, and believe in yourself. Concord University, an education you can put to work. 1-888-384-5249.
Brought to you by the Republican National Committee. George W. Bush, Maximum Decider. Next time you see a stranger on a plane, a stranger with those swarthy looks we all know, ask yourself, shouldn't I be afraid? Maybe he wants to kill me. Maybe he hates us for our freedom. Fear. It's what's for dinner.
As I understand the conflict right now between the president's bill and the one supported by the Democrats, John McCain and Lindsey Graham, is that John McCain and Lindsey Graham and the Democrats say that the bill, the standards we use, should be the standards that are the same as the treaty we signed, the Geneva Convention signed after World War II that every civilized nation follows. And the president is saying, that restricts me too much. That's too humane. I want to be able to do other things. I won't say what they are, but sources tell us that things like waterboarding, you know, drowning people, putting them in 50-degree weather. And the question, I think, is should we hold the United States to the same standards that England holds itself to, that Canada holds itself to, that other civilized nations hold themselves to?
Get the view from inside the Beltway with Mark Levine on the Radio Inside Scoop right here, 2 to 3 p.m. weekdays on the Head On Radio Network.
Right about now, the Funk Soul Brother. Check it out now, the Funk Soul Brother. Right about now, the Funk Soul Brother. Check it out now, the Funk Soul Brother. Right about now, the Funk Soul Brother. Check it out now, the Funk Soul Brother. Right about now, the Funk Soul Brother. Check it out now, the Funk Soul Brother. Right about now, the Funk Soul Brother. Check it out now, the Funk Soul Brother.
Twenty-seven and a half minutes before the hour. I'm Bob. Like I said, a bunch of stories to hit as we head into the weekend, because I don't want these things just rolling around waiting, because God only knows what's going to blow up on Tuesday. And, you know, at this point in time, when I say blow up, that used to mean some sort of big story breaking. given the people in charge of this country, now I don't think it means that anymore. We had the story last night, and we talked a little bit earlier this evening about the Asheville police quashing the free speech rights of Jonas and Kendra Phillips, who were just holding up a sign saying, "Impeach Bush Cheney." That's it. That's all it said. Didn't say to honk. Didn't say stomp on your brakes and make somebody rear-end you. Just said impeach Bush Cheney. Okay, let's look at the other side of the spectrum. A man who says his constitutional rights were violated when he was arrested for passing out religious literature has filed a civil lawsuit against the city of Cumming, Georgia. His attorney says it's an attempt to make sure the ordinance under which he was arrested is removed from the books. Frederick Bauman was on a sidewalk in Cumming, hassling people, handing them, goofy-ass tracts when he was busted. And, of course, he has a lawyer from the Alliance Defense Fund, which is a right-wing freak lawyer outfit that would no sooner defend Jonas and Kendra Phillips for holding up peacefully holding up a sign that says impeach Bush Cheney than they would defend someone for holding up a sign that says stop the second coming. But they'll defend this guy out there trying to shove his stupid stinking tracts into the faces of people who didn't want them and didn't want to be bothered by him. So, you know, look at the contrast. Peaceful, silent protest. You get run in by the Asheville, North Carolina Police Department and Sergeant Rick Riddle. On the other hand, in Cumming, Georgia, you appeal the case, it gets dismissed, and the lawyer comes out and says, "This is another installment in the continuing saga entitled Do Christians Have First Amendment Rights of Free Speech?" Although the obvious answer is yes, some government officials don't seem to think so. Frederick Bauman was arrested, jailed, tried, and convicted all in a two-day time span for merely distributing religious tracts on a public sidewalk. Gee, I gotta wonder if Cumming, Georgia has a statute like Asheville, North Carolina that says impeding the flow of traffic on the sidewalk is a damn crime. He was arrested for violation of a parade ordinance. So you know that since this story is coming from the American Family Association, you know that they're lying. You know that they're not telling all the truth. Welcome to Bush America. That's 3 K's when you spell it. Or if you prefer to call it Dick America, that's 4 K's. One of them's by itself. Then there's the American Civil Rights Union that tries to be a counterpoint, if you will, to the American Civil Liberties Union. Remember, the American Civil Liberties Union, that's right, the same ACLU that defended Rush Limbaugh's right to doctor shop to satisfy his endless Jones for OxyContin. John Armour is their legal counsel, and he says it's outrageous that foreign governments are deliberately trying to influence a case going to the U.S. Supreme Court relating to the terrorist detainees held at Guantanamo Bay, Cuba. You dumbass, John Armour. It's not relating to the terrorist detainees, it's relating to the goat herder detainees and the shopkeeper detainees and the detainees who were sold for $500 in gold or whatnot by their neighbors and duly paid off by you, the taxpayer, John Armour. What's he upset about? Well, two retired diplomats, two rear admirals, and a retired Marine general, all of whom are surprisingly American, as well as 383 current or former members of the European and British parliaments, are filing a friend of the court brief in the United States Supreme Court to allow the concentration camp prisoners. I mean, hell, that's what Guantanamo is. Can we please use the right words? Full access to the U.S. court system. That's, you know, not release. Not asking for them to be released. Just asking for them not to be subjected to a little tin horn kangaroo court system that George Bush has in place. John Armour says, it's very straightforward, and there's a unanimous Supreme Court decision from 1942 concerning eight German saboteurs who came to the United States with the intent to blow things up. Supreme Court ruled then that they may be tried by a tribunal. They did not get to a standard U.S. court with standard U.S. rights. Oh, you freak, you fool. Those people were caught in actual acts of sabotage, or the planning stages, the conspiracy therefore. God, I hate these lying right-wing SOBs. They weren't standing on a rocky hillside in Afghanistan looking for a goat when the U.S. military pulled up and said, time to go, buddy, stuffed a bag over their head and put them in a shipping container. So Armour believes that the two retired diplomats, the two rear admirals and the retired Marine general should not be able to be to file a friend of the court brief. See, that's why they hate the judicial system so much. That's why they've created this meme, if you will, of activist judges. Because when they say activist judges, you've got to have going on in your head, you've got to know exactly what they mean. And when you hear a right-winger say activist judges, you've got to know that what they mean is any judge who would hold the Constitution to be superior to the dictates of George W. Bush. That's what that means. And a couple of little cases. This is one of those great moments. I'm glad that I get the updates from Truth Out. They do great, great work at Truth Out. Two headlines, one on top of the other. Bush email mystery deepens, followed by Bush seeks legal immunity for telecoms. The first one, from ABC News, is the blotter. The White House will not identify a private company which appears to be involved in the disappearance of millions of White House emails. Didn't our good friend Peter Godbold talk about this one night and what this actually meant? The company, unnamed, was responsible for reviewing and archiving White House emails. And the White House Oversight and Government Reform Committee, the House Oversight and Government Reform Committee Chair Henry Waxman has repeatedly requested, just tell us what the name of the damn company is. Oh, we haven't made it up yet. Karl Rove Incorporated. Okay, yeah, that's the ticket. Karl Rove Incorporated. Waxman's been asking for months. And they're still waiting. White House spokescreep Scott Stanzel declined to tell the blotter or ABC News the company's name or explain why the White House would not provide it to Congress. According to the White House, at least 5 million emails were not properly archived and may be lost forever. Now, they're just, the dog ate them. They're lost. You know, we had a computer crash, and this guy came in, and he said he couldn't fix it, and you know, he carried the hard drive away to fix it, but, you know, I think we lost his number. We can't find him, so the hard drive's gone. Okay, great. In addition to requesting the firm's name, Waxman's staff has also asked to see a White House report which detailed the days on which few or no emails were archived. And, of course, the White House is telling him to eat it. Shut up, Waxman, or we'll put you on a small plane with a single engine, and we'll wellstone you, Waxman. Because, you know, that's how these thugs are. But that's okay. You know, you can breathe easy. Breaking news being reported. Senator Craig to announce resignation. Sleep tight tonight, America. Nobody's going to tap their toes in the restroom stall next to you. So let's review. David Vitter likes to put on a diaper and get kicked by hookers, but he gets to stay in the Senate. Larry Craig likes to go to the bathroom and play with other men's Johnsons, and he has to go. They're both married. They both have children. They're both defenders of marriage. But one gets to stay, and the other has to leave. Hypocrite, thy name is Republican. And just in case you were wondering, that story about the unnamed company that just lost 5 million emails, even if we knew their names, George Bush wants to make sure that we the people can't do anything to them for screwing up like that. The Bush administration wants the power to grant legal immunity to telecommunications company that are slapped with privacy suits after they helped the White House spy on you and me. Even the Associated Press says that the proposal from the White House is vaguely worded, but it would shield any person who allegedly provided information, infrastructure, or, quote, any other form of assistance, brought him a ham sandwich, to the intelligence agencies after September 11th. It covers any classified communications activity intended to protect the country from terrorism. Guess what? All activity is classified communications activity intended to protect the country from terrorism, because terrorism... Well, shut up, Bob. It goes on and on and on and on. Oh, wait, by the way, while Jonas and Kendra Phillips of Asheville, North Carolina, get hauled down to the station house and asked, "Do you belong to any organizations? You belong to Veterans for Peace? Get my name right, boy." While that happens, a graduate of Lewis Palmer High School in Denver has filed a lawsuit against the school for taking disciplinary actions against her for talking about her Jesus during her May 2006 graduation ceremony. Erica Corder was one of the 15 valedictorians of her graduating class. 15 valedictorians? I thought the nature of the valedictorian was... it's like the Highlander. There can be only one. She was one of 15 valedictorians at Lewis Palmer High School. And she was told that she couldn't be given her diploma because of her speech. Her 30-second speech. She's being represented by Liberty Counsel, the law firm set up by the Falwell organization. The principal, see, she violated the rules. They were told, don't get up there and don't, please, it's 30 seconds. "This situation clearly is outrageous," says her lawyer. "Valedictorians have the right to express their religious viewpoints while at graduation." Really? That's part of the definition of valedictorian? That you have to get up and prattle about some invisible thing? "30-second speech, and the best thing she can come up with is, 'Thank you, Jesus!'" I mean, I can understand standing up and saying, "Oh, thank God, I'm out of here." We won't talk about that. Let's see. There's more persecution of the Christians. This time it's Holiday Inn. It's the Holiday Inn in Naperville, Illinois. The Americans for Truth. Well, they got to be a good organization if they're for truth. This is a gang that runs around trying to attack people for what goes on when the lights go out, You know what I mean? They wanted to hold their October 6th banquet at the hotel. And it was all set. They had it all set. And then, because he wants to create this bogus, phony, dummied-up, ginned-up controversy, the Peter LaBarbera... Peter Godbold, where are you when I need you? Is that a drag queen name? LaBarbera? Mercedes LaBarbera? Yeah, whatever. A man to be reckoned with. I don't know. But Peter LaBarbera... then tells the hotel, well, listen, you know, we're going to have our banquet here, and we're going to see if we can get some queers to protest outside. And the hotel goes, wait, no. We don't have a signed agreement. We don't have a signed document. You just called in and said you wanted to have a banquet, and you wanted the rubber chicken with the tough green beans. No. You're not going to use the Holiday Inn of Naperville, Illinois, as a platform for your weirdness, and you're not going to attract a bunch of protests that could conceivably endanger, or not even if it doesn't endanger, make the other paying guests of the hotel have a less than satisfactory hotel experience. LaBarbera has said he cannot imagine the hotel treating homosexual activists in the same manner. It's another example of Christians being treated as second-class citizens. No, it's another example of bigots being treated like bigots deserve to be treated by God. It goes on and on. Oh, and by the way, even if Larry Craig does resign... Mr. LaBarbera. Mr. LaBarbera says that the homosexual agenda enable the same kind of promiscuity that Larry Craig engaged in. It's the homo's fault. The fact that Larry Craig went in, sat down in the toilet with his wide stance, and then proceeded to do river dance is the fault of the homos, according to Americans for Truth. I want a truth. I want a truth in advertising. I want a truth in naming law. Americans for Truth. It seems that the homosexual movement is complicit in a lot of this behavior because they're not just telling homosexuals to stop. When you have a major legal organization like Lambda Legal actually publishing a book to help these so-called cruisers, which are men cruising for secret sex on the side like this, when you have organizations like that enabled, it seems like they're also complicit in this sort of behavior. They made Larry Craig do it. By the way, if Larry Craig does step down, I've got a pretty good idea who would be a likely inside tracker for his position. I shouldn't say position when talking about Larry Craig, but that's okay. Out in Idaho, they've got a freshman congressman named Sally. Bill Sally. You remember when we had the story of the Hindu priest leading the prayer in the Senate, of which Bill Sally is not a member? Well, none of the rest of the Idaho delegation would stand up for Jesus, but Bill Sally did. He said, "We have not only a Hindu prayer being offered in the Senate, we have a Muslim member of the House of Representatives now." Those are changes, and they're not what was envisioned by the founding fathers. Bill Sally, the Muslim member of the House of Representatives is Keith Ellison, and he's an African-American, you freak. And no, you're absolutely right. The founding fathers never envisioned any African-Americans being in the House of Representatives because they envisioned the African-Americans being out in the cotton patch. Oh, this is not a fight you want, Bill Sally. But don't be surprised if Larry Craig steps down and you find out that Bill Sally is named as his replacement. You heard it here first. One last moment of manifest stupidity, if you will, please. You know, we talked about Oklahoma Senator Jim Inhofe nearly getting shot out of the sky over in Baghdad, along with Senator Shelby of Alabama. Well, they've got two senators in Oklahoma, unfortunately, both of whom are idiots. The other idiot is by the name of Tom Coburn. Tom Coburn has put a hold on legislation that would address the needs and the questions surrounding why so many veterans are committing suicide. He's put a hold on that legislation because he's afraid, wait for it, he's afraid that it might lead, the record keeping might lead to crimping veterans' rights to purchase handguns. I ain't kidding. Let's talk to our good buddy Rick. Hey, Rick, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob. I didn't mean to get you in the middle of your little...
No, that's okay. It's so good to hear from you.
Yeah, another reason why I didn't want to look into it is because then they're going to have to spend some money in treats and stuff. You know, and the bit about the handguns is probably just absolutely right on the market. And until we can get more of these congressmen to come out of the water closet...
He'll be here all week. Try the veal.
I don't think we're going to get rid of him. I don't think we're going to make any changes. But anyway, I just want to let you know I'm live and well. I had to get that recorded. It's my joke. We all copyrighted. Nobody can use it but you. But anyway.
Okay. I'll remember that. Credit will be given.
Okay. Y'all have a good night, okay?
Good to hear from you, Rick. We'll talk, talk hopefully at some length next week.
It sounds good to me.
All right.
We'll do so.
Bye now.
Bye.
Our good friend, horn psychologist, Rick Goodner. Awfully good to hear from Rick. He's been through a hell of a time lately. I'm glad to know that your thoughts were with him. No more stories. This is the end of the show. This is Labor Day weekend. Labor Day is over 100 years old. It grew out of a celebration and a parade honoring working class folks in New York City, organized by the Knights of Labor in 1882. In 1884, they had a big parade in New York City celebrating the working class, the workers. It was held the first Monday in September. They passed a resolution, the Knights did, to hold all future parades on the same day designated by them as Labor Day. The first states to declare it a state holiday were Oregon, Colorado, New York, Massachusetts, and New Jersey. Labor Day became an official national holiday in 1894. It is so much more, so very much more, than the day on which ladies have to stop wearing white. It is so much more than the last day that the kids can get a dip in the pool. It is so much more than the end of summer. It is so much more than a reason to fire up the barbecue. It is so much more than a reason to have a parade. Labor Day, if you get right down to it, is the very heart and soul of what America is about. The idea that if you work hard and you stand up and you stand together, that the American dream can be there for you too, and that you, as a working person who carries this country on your back, that you deserve a day all to yourself, that you deserve a day to be honored as much or more than any Washington or Lincoln, any president, any congressman, any preacher, that the working people of America are the most important people of America. And thus we have a Labor Day. Remember it. Remember the blood sacrifice. Celebrate, but remember the blood sacrifice and have a laugh. Have a little bit of fun. If you're going to party, party responsibly. And remember the people who made it happen. With their blood, their sweat, and yes, their tears, and their very lives. Remember them, because as long as you remember them, they're standing beside you in spirit, and they are in fact smiling on you. That's it. Thanks, Agnes. Thanks, everybody. Strictly Confidential is next. And always, always, always. Gina, it's all for you.
This business of these VA hospitals. You know that woman that denied services to that?
This is the Quality News Network. Republican Senator John Warner says it's time to pull at least 3% of the 160,000 U.S. troops out of Iraq by Christmas. However, Army Major General Rick Lynch, a commander in Iraq, says the enemy would quickly retake the terrain that coalition troops have fought hard for. Lynch added that it would be a giant step backward and that he needs as many forces as he can get until Iraqis can step up and take over, perhaps sometime next year. In Iraq today, one U.S. soldier was killed and four wounded in combat. Last night, al-Qaeda and Iraq militants attacked a police station. In the subsequent two-hour battle, three people were killed and 14 arrested. In Afghanistan, three British soldiers were killed when a U.S. airstrike was called in by their patrol, which was under attack by the Taliban. U.S. and British officials expressed their deepest regrets to the dead soldiers' families and loved ones. The British added that U.S. air support is very important and often has helped get their troops out of tight situations. Sudan is accepting weapons in defiance of a U.N. arms embargo. They just ejected two Western diplomats, and they're now saying that only 9,000 people have died in 4 years of fighting. 26,000 U.N. peacekeepers will soon be arriving in the region. Over the past 4 years, 200,000 people have been killed, and 2 million have been displaced. Reputed Ku Klux Klansman, 72-year-old James Ford Seale, has been sentenced to 3 life terms in prison for his part in the 1964 Mississippi murder of 2 black teenage boys. Another Klansman that was granted immunity admitted to participating in the crime and turned against 72-year-old Seale. Quarterback Michael Vick has pleaded guilty to interstate commerce for the purpose of dogfighting, but he hasn't admitted to killing the weak performers or gambling on the cruel fights, as his co-defendants have said. Vic's estranged father told him to give up the activity years ago, or at least change the name on the deed to his property where the operation was based. The man who shot Alabama Governor George Wallace is preparing for release after serving 35 years in prison. 57-year-old Arthur Bremer has been a model prisoner. In Ohio and Missouri, an infant and a 2-year-old died of heat stroke yesterday in separate incidents after being left inside of locked cars. You're listening to the Quality News Network. Science and business next.
Terry's Lounge at the Cypress Inn in downtown Carmel invites you to a great evening of your favorite foods, beverages, and live music Thursday through Saturday, featuring Dick Whittington and friends from 6 to 9:30. Terry's Lounge in the Cypress Inn features an appetizer-sized menu and our famous burger, salad, and fries. Afternoon tea, a great local tradition, is served from 1 to 4 p.m. daily by reservation. Sunday evenings are special as Richard Divnick entertains from 5 to 8 p.m. with classical renditions of pop, jazz, and classical music. Join the fun, food, and music at Terry's Lounge in the Cypress Inn, corner of Lincoln and 7th. In downtown Carmel.
Ross Savage's valiant attempt to row across the Pacific Ocean came to a halt 90 miles off the Northern California coast last night. Her custom boat rolled over several times, prompting her to call a friend who notified the Coast Guard. Ms. Savage, who successfully rowed across the Atlantic in 2005, was on a voyage to bring awareness to the Texas-sized garbage patch floating in the Pacific. The FDA is proposing stricter requirements for sunscreen lotions to protect against UVA rays, which are associated with serious long-term skin damage. New applications for unemployment benefits decreased by 2,000 claims last week. The housing market has some positive numbers to show, and that news is boosting the stock market this morning. Sales of new homes increased 2.8% in July to 870,000. That's 50,000 more homes sold across the country than forecast. U.S.-made durable goods are up, too. The demand for long-lasting manufactured goods, machinery, steel, computers, and airplanes jumped 5.9% in July. That's 4.4% higher than forecast. The Dow is up 65 points at 13,300, and the NASDAQ is up 14 at 2556. At this moment, the S&P 500 is up 7 at 1469, and oil is over $70 a barrel. It's up 62 cents. There's more at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Michael.
You've heard the news. Now let's get behind the story. Let's rejoin Dr. Bill O'Brien. The doctor is in.
Good afternoon. This is Bill O'Brien, and I say afternoon. It is 5 minutes after the hour. In the East, it is 5 minutes after the hour of 3 p.m. on a Friday afternoon. It's the 24th day of August. And we welcome you to today's program. It is indeed a rejoin, even though that's usually the intro for the second hour. It's a rejoin because I've been gone for a while, and it is so wonderful to be back with you. I guess it's good, maybe it's bad, but things don't stop just because we're otherwise employed, as it were, and as you know, besides doing this program, I have a job, and I work for Concord University, and we're starting our fall semester. And not only are we starting it, which is very busy in itself, we have about 600-plus students here in our off-campus setting here in southern West Virginia, in Beckley. But we're changing facilities, a new shared higher education facility in this area, which is a very, very exciting thing, and I know some of you, depending on where you are listening, would probably yawn at this because these are probably things that you see all the time. But here in southern West Virginia, this is a first for us. We have a facility that has opened with classrooms and computer labs and all of these things, and there are 8 public institutions sharing space in this facility. And the idea is that we're going to perform miracles in terms of finding ways for institutions that have always competed with each other to cooperate, all to the benefit of students. And we moved into that facility this past Monday. The first day of classes was Monday, and we opened in the new facility without phones, without internet service, but we opened anyway, and it was so exciting. And it's been a very, very busy week for me. And what a way to end my work week, at least my official work week, which is to spend a couple of hours here on the Head On Radio Network. It is a pleasure. I have missed being here over the last four or five programs, and I welcome you not only to this program but to the Head On Radio Network, and I thank you for giving us a portion of your time. I trust that you will not be disappointed in what you gain from tuning into the Head On Radio Network. I'm not talking about myself. I'm talking about the other programming here. This is an exciting and much needed outlet in communications today, especially given the fact that we are being totally inundated with information from only one perspective. And it seems to me we do need an alternative voice. And the Head On Radio Network is that voice. I encourage you to call and participate in our program and share in the discussion and in the dialogue, and I mean that very sincerely. Our call line is toll-free. It is available to you, the number 1-877-443-2366. That's 1-877-443-2366. It is, again, a pleasure to be with you. A lot's happened since I was last here, and I'm not going to try to recreate all of that. Some of it is unpleasant, and it's better probably not recalled at all. But obviously, looking at what is happening in the world around us, it seems to me that one of the big issues here domestically, within the United States itself, is the situation with Michael Vick. That's been getting so much attention, and you probably heard in the news at the top of the hour that Michael Vick has pled guilty to some things, but not to the things that that most irritate most people. And it's a very, very interesting, it's a very, very sad situation. I think that a friend made a comment the other day, which I thought was pretty poignant, and he said, you know, the one positive, if you can possibly find positives in all of this, is that it has caused those people who love animals, and specifically love dogs, to appreciate what they have and why they need to share what they have and what they enjoy and what they cherish. So in a way, the Vic situation has created a backlash to the good. And, you know, this is the ultimate in trying to make lemonade out of lemons. There's no question. I realize that. But it is such an absolutely horrendous situation that we've come upon. And everybody's focusing on what the NFL is going to do about it. And you know, it is so sad to look at a career. When you look at the size of the contract that Michael Vick had, and you begin to realize that by pleading guilty even to one charge today, Michael Vick has probably squandered the better part of a $130 million contract. So, in fact, it is very interesting because Neil Bortz was raising this issue several days ago about just penalty, where the idea of the penalty fitting the crime. If you think about, and he's right, there's no question, if you think about what this is going to cost Michael Vick in dollars, the fine is pretty stiff. If you think about it, it's going to cost him the better part of a $130 million contract, plus all of the various private contracts, advertising contracts that he had. Many of his advertisers have already pulled out. But the fact of the matter is, Michael Vick obviously violated, and the reaction I think shows that, violated things that are very, 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 very important to an awful lot of people. And I find it, very honestly, I find it a positive that outrage is still there, and that people can still be shocked in a world where we see so much negativism sometimes, so many bad things happening around us, that we, for our own survival, for our own psychological sanity, if you will, we have to kind of force ourselves to become a little bit rigid against some of these things. If we let all of these things penetrate us, we would indeed lose it. So many of us have become not immune to these kinds of things, but a little bit less sensitive, perhaps, for our own protection. But obviously Michael Vick was able to inflame what is within all of us in ways that I think it's encouraging, because it suggests that it's still there. We're at 12 minutes after the hour. Again, our call-in line number is toll-free, 1-877-443-2366. Before we take our first break, we've got a couple of minutes, and I wanted to share something, and it ties in directly with, not with Michael Vick necessarily, but with this idea of what is within us that is good. I, as any of you have listened to this program, know pretty much where I'm coming from, you know, over the last weeks and months. And, you know, I'm one of these people that believes that man is basically good, human nature is basically positive rather than negative. And I believe that we've done things which force many of us to repress some of the best in ourselves, the best in us, and I think that's unfortunate. And one of the reasons that I'm proud to consider myself a liberal is because I believe that this is the key to what liberalism is about, which is a basic faith and belief in the goodness of mankind, and the fact that if we allow that goodness to come forward, and if we can get together and share, all of us in the same direction, we can indeed create a better life for all of us, not just here in this country or in this region, but on the face of this earth. I believe that that's what liberalism is about. I believe that we've unfortunately allowed conservatives and those who disagree with us to define us in ways which are not very encouraging and not very positive. And this is one of the reasons why I'm proud to be a liberal, and I see that in the reaction to Michael Vick and to that story, and the absolute disdain that so many people have for what he seemingly or apparently did, and you know, obviously this will be heard in court, but he did plead guilty to some of it, not all of it. Then it seems to me that the things that I believe most deeply in are indeed there. And this kind of reinforces the fact that it's in all of us. And I find that very, very encouraging and very, very positive. We're at 15 minutes after the hour. I want to thank you for tuning in today to the Head On Radio Network. We're going to pause for a minute or two and listen to a message or two. And when we come back, we'll continue our program. This is Bill O'Brien. Please stay with us.
The Head On Radio Network.
This is Bill O'Brien with a message that pretty much defines Concord University. It's from Emily Dickinson. There is no frigate like a book to take us lands away, nor any courses like a page of prancing poetry. This traverse may the poorest take without oppressive toll. How frugal is the chariot that bears a human soul. Respect for learning, a mission to deliver education that touches souls, consideration to what students can afford, career rewards that pay dividends far beyond the dollars earned. At Concord, we've never crossed that important line between the business of education and education as a business. The first is extremely serious. It changes lives and connects with the moral and the spiritual. We're good at that. The second is no less serious. It raises ethical concerns, however. We avoid that. Concord University, the frugal chariot that bears human souls. Call the Concord Admissions Office, 1-888-384-5249.
It wasn't exactly planes, trains, and automobiles on Head On with Bob Kincaid.
This is what the Bush Administration Justice Department didn't want you to see back in 2001. They took out and they huffed the marker a little bit, and then they went, oh, cool. And they wiped out the name where it says, the plane was chartered either by the Saudi Arabian royalty family or Osama bin Laden. Somebody's got to call up and say, good afternoon. Thank you for calling Ryan International Flights. How may I help you?
Hello. This is Osama bin Laden, and I would like to rent a Boeing 727. Do you have one handy?
Oh, just a moment. Let me check.
It's a Mr. Bin Laden wants to know if we got a 727. Do we, Harry, do we have a 727?
Yeah, we got a 727 just sitting there on the lot. Going cheap. There's nothing here. Nothing to look at. Keep moving. Pay no attention to the man behind the curtain. The, you know, the 6 foot 7 inch Arab with the portable dialysis machine and the white robes.
Head On with Bob Kincaid, weeknights, 6 to 9 p.m. Eastern, only on the Head On Radio Network.
Hi, you've reached the Johnsons. We're not available to take your call. If you're calling about the apartment for rent, please leave your name and number after the beep, and someone will get back to you.
Hi, my name is Sanjay Rana. I would like to make an appointment to see the apartment.
Oh, hi, this is Robin DiPaola, and I'm calling about the apartment. Please give me a call back at 2...
Hi, hello. This is Rafael Paredes. Please call me back at 718.
This is Jeannie Chu. I'd like to talk to you about the apartment. If you can, please call me back.
Hello, my name's Clayton Anderson. I'm calling about the ad in the Sunday paper.
Oh, hello. This is Mrs. Johnson. You must be calling about the apartment.
I am. Is it still available?
Well, you're the first person to call about it. Are you available?
Housing discrimination of all kinds is illegal in the U.S. If you think you've been a victim because of your race, color, national origin, sex, religion, disability, or family status, call 800-669-9777 or visit fairhousinglaw.org. Fair housing. It's not an option. It's the law. Brought to you by HUD, the Ad Council, and LCCREF.
Join the conversation. Call Dr. Bill now at 877-443-2366. Now, Dr. Bill O'Brien.
This is Bill O'Brien back with you. We're at 19 minutes after the hour. If you're in the East, 19 minutes after the hour of 3 p.m. on a very, very, very warm August 24th. And we're in the Southeast. I'm speaking to you from southern West Virginia. We're in a drought. We're having extreme heat, as you, I'm sure you know if you've watched national weather as well as regional weather. Our friends in the Midwest, in northern Ohio and Wisconsin and Minnesota, are being deluged with incredible rain. In the southeastern United States, we're being engulfed with extreme heat and drought, and that's kind of where I'm speaking to you here, where I sit at 1 o'clock this afternoon. You've got to realize we're in the mountains here in Appalachia, and the 1 p.m. temperature here where I am was 91 degrees. I've lived here for 17 years, and rarely, rarely does it reach 90. And we've had 90, 91, 92, 94 for the last several days. And what that means is that our friends south and southeast and west of us, I'm speaking specifically of Nashville, Tennessee, which reports 13 consecutive days of temperatures above 100 degrees. So again, I think weather is an issue, and of course it's a big political issue as well, and the global warming issue. We mentioned that last time I was on, we were talking about that, and we'll talk about it again because I think it's a major issue that all of us have to deal with. Again, I want to thank you for tuning in to today's program. If you're just joining us, welcome. If you've been with us since the top of the program, we appreciate your staying with us. Our call-in line number is toll-free, and the intro to this program talks about the issue of dialogue, and what that means is that it takes more than one, and we do enjoy and learning from each other, and that's really what the basis of this program is about. We have a call-in line number. It is toll-free, and the whole concept can't work unless people use that toll-free call line. The number, 1-877-443-2366. Let me repeat that. It's 1-877-443-2366. As I mentioned at the beginning of the program, for those of you who were with us, it's been a while since I've been here, and I was touching on a few. I was planning to touch on a few things that have occurred since the last time we were together. And the first one that I mentioned was the Michael Vick situation. And of course, at the news at the top of the hour today, Michael Vick has pled guilty to one charge in Richmond, Virginia court this afternoon. And obviously, this one's not going away, folks. This is one of those issues that strikes us emotionally. I was talking about the positives that I see in this whole situation earlier. It has brought forth, I think, the best in all of us, because clearly what Michael Vick did was violate something that is very, very important and very, very significant to many, many, many of us. And from a positive perspective, that's good. As I mentioned earlier, as a liberal, one of the things that makes me proud to be a liberal is the fact that I believe that this sense of outrage that Michael Vick has touched in so many people is what makes all of us able to live together in peace and harmony. And it is my sense that when, for whatever reason, these positive instincts in people are repressed or submerged or suppressed, for whatever reason, we get into trouble as people, as communities, as neighborhoods, as societies, as nations, and as co-inhabitants of this earth. And I think that in one sense, there is something positive in the Michael Vick story, in the sense that he has touched something that has created a reaction that gives me, it renews my faith in the fact that that people are not immune and inured to the negatives that are all around us in today's world. And so I think that is very, very significant. In that same vein, and I'm not shifting gears here because I think there's a distinct connection, but it's one of the things that occurred to me, and specifically it deals with traditional talk radio and this liberal-conservative split and the nature of our political dialogue today. And it is indeed tied to this idea of the difference between liberals and conservatives and what liberals believe and what conservatives believe. And this seems to be a minor thing. And I'm guessing that a lot of people would see it as a minor thing, and I see it as a major thing. I'm a frequent listener. I do listen to terrestrial talk radio, to regular talk radio. I guess to be very, very blunt about it, and I've said this before, if you're going to contribute to anything in this country positively, it seems to me, you've got to know what the other guys are talking about. You know, very basic. And so whenever I get the chance, when I'm in the car running around, which I've done a lot of this week, I listen to whoever's on, and locally here for 3 hours a day, we have Neil Bortz out of Atlanta. We used to have Rush Limbaugh, and I believe that the local radio station shifted about a year and a half ago, and dropped Rush Limbaugh, not because he wasn't popular, but I think because his program was too expensive. But be that as it may, over the months I've listened to Neil Bortz, and you know, I find good things and bad things. I think I have to be very, very honest. But one of the things that's going on right now with his program, and it's, I'm struck by it in the link, making a connection, it may be a stretch, with the Michael Vick situation, is that yesterday and today Neil Bortz is broadcasting from the Aflac Cancer Hospital in Atlanta. He's doing a radio promotion fundraiser for children with cancer and who are being treated in the Aflac Cancer Center in Atlanta. And as of noon today, when I turned the program off, he had raised over the last day and a half a little bit better than $500,000 to go for the treatment of cancer in children. And over the last 7 or 8 years since he's been doing this, they've raised something in the area of $15 million or $14 million or something like that. A very, very positive, very, very good, good thing. And I don't, in no way do I want to besmirch or criticize that kind of good work. That's the kind of stuff that I love, and I admire him for doing that. But one of the things that I've noticed over the last 2 days in listening to the program is that against the background of a fundraiser for cancer in children, the ideology, and to put it very bluntly, the tongue of Neil Bortz is almost, if you're a computer user or a Microsoft Word user, the word that I would use is bolded. In other words, the stuff that that Neil Bortz says, and the way he says it, as he talks about issues in contemporary society, becomes much more pronounced and much more visible against the backdrop of a fundraiser for cancer in children. And I think the contrast, the contradiction, if you will, between what he is doing to raise money for children and what he spouts on terrestrial talk radio. That contrast, that contradiction, that oxymoron, if you want to use that term, becomes much more evident against this backdrop. I've always seen it, and I see it in Rush especially, but I've seen it in Neil Bortz as well. I find him a little bit, most of the time, a little bit more sane and a little bit brighter than Rush, to be very honest with you. I think Neil Bortz is a very, very bright man. You know, sometimes not bright enough, but very bright. He's an attorney, and that doesn't make him bright, and doesn't make him honest either. But the thing that I was struck by was that when the fundraising portion of the program was over and they shifted back to the regular format of the program, which is talking about issues, primarily political issues, that are significant in today's society, the contrast between where he is now for the last 2 days and what he says on a regular basis becomes much more pronounced and much easier to define. For example, after a fundraiser today, and they were interviewing children who were coming into the Aflac Center to have chemo treatment, radiation treatment, and various other things. Very, very moving, very, very, you know, and again, nothing to criticize here, nothing. I admire it. But then, after a message or two and a phone number where you can contribute to that cause, the program begins to address some of the major issues. And the first one, in one of the breaks today, happened to be Hillary Clinton and the speech that Hillary Clinton gave at a campaign rally in New Hampshire yesterday. And Hillary Clinton apparently made some comments about the political race and what might happen in the 2008 election if we were to be attacked again as we were on 9/11. And her position was that would, you know, such an event like that would probably help the Republicans politically. And Neil Bortz was all over that. But he made the comment that Hillary Clinton has a mouth like a torn pocket. This was today. Yesterday he was talking about bumper stickers that would point out the hypocrisy of liberals. And I guess the point I'm trying to make is that the vile nature of the conversation, the division of this country between liberals and conservatives, between red states and blue states, that really is the essence of political conversation in today's America, is so potent and so poignant and so stinging and so vile that it makes dialogue and conversation in today's society much more difficult. And it became clear today, here in a live broadcast from a cancer treatment center for children, the adjectives and the tone of the conversation used to talk about Hillary Clinton, to talk about liberals, to talk about the media, seemed so inappropriate. I guess that's the best word that I could use. It all seemed so inappropriate and so inconsistent and so contradictory. And what it suggested to me was something that's very frightening, and this is where I go back to the Michael Vick situation. What it suggests to me is that Neil Bortz, in this case, but conservatives generally, conservatives who talk for a living, if you will, on terrestrial talk radio, as a group, it seems to me, see no contradiction in this kind of a situation. They seem to see no contradiction, no inconsistency in what they're saying about other people and the tone in which they say it. And at the same time, they are participating in a fundraiser for children with cancer, and they see no inconsistency in that. They see no obligation in an audience of young children, young sick children, strong fighting children, to tone it down a bit and to be a little bit more humane. The vocabulary, the words, the use of words very vile words, very negative words, words that stifle conversation rather than encourage it, are used frequently. And the whole thing seemed to stand out in stark contrast with the context within which the broadcast was coming today, which, again, was a cancer treatment center for children. And the thing that scared me, I know I've run over and we'll stop for our break in a second, but one of the things that really concerned me was, could it be possible that indeed they see no contradiction between this? They see nothing that indicates that they are poisoning the ability to have conversation and dialogue in a society whose political system is totally dependent upon it. It is vile hatred and negativism and personal attack and innuendo and just vile, inhuman litany of words, phrases, and harsh tones. And the fact that they see nothing wrong with that is more frightening than the issue itself. That's one of the things that I began to see as I've listened to this program off and on over the last 2 days. Neil Bortz has no problem shifting from this kind of negativism and this kind of personal attack and invective against Hillary Clinton or against John Edwards or against John Kerry or against, just go on and on and on. The Clinton especially. And then going back to the hospital and interviewing little children who are just coming out after their chemo treatment. And he sees no contradiction to that at all. That's scary. That's why I think that the positive aspect of the Michael Vick story, which is the fact that the very best in people who are outraged by what Michael Vick is doing, is coming out, is a very positive, because what it suggests is that these people are not going to be successful. They may try it, they may do it, but they are not going to be successful because they really aren't scratching. They really aren't even scratching the surface of the best that's in all of us. And I guess that's the positivism that is inherent in liberalism. And I think it's neat, very honestly. 35 minutes after the hour, ran over a little bit, got a little bit carried away there maybe. You're listening to the Head On Radio Network. I'm Bill O'Brien. We'll pause for a message or two, and we'll be right back. Please stay with us.
This is the Head On Radio Network.
There's one place on the web you can go that's so topical you can apply it liberally. WD40.com. WDYAD40.com. Clyde, Wally, and Dookie are there. They're working hard every day to give you updates in news, politics, and a great sense of humor. So stop on by and see the boys at WD40.com, a place where you can raise your voice and be heard. WD40.com. Your one-stop shop for all things progressive.
I'm Matt Rothschild, the editor of the Progressive Magazine, with my progressive point of view. The latest national intelligence estimate doesn't give much reason for hope for Bush's hopeless war in Iraq. The best it can muster is the claim that if all goes well, security in Iraq may improve modestly during the next 6 to 12 months, but the levels of insurgent and sectarian violence will remain high. On top of that, the Maliki government will become more precarious, in part because the U.S. is bolstering Sunnis who oppose it, and the Iraqi army will probably need longer than 12 months to make significant progress. As it is today, after all the training the U.S. has been providing, lo, these past 4 years, the Iraqi army has still not improved enough to conduct major operations independent of the U.S. How long are we, the American people, supposed to wait here? How many more U.S. soldiers are going to lose their lives for this reckless mission? How many more billions of dollars are we going to blow with no good end in sight? The national intelligence estimate is the very definition of quagmire. But Bush wants to keep muddling along, squandering $2 billion a week and 100 soldiers a month, just so he can avoid the confession that he made a disastrous blunder. That's a criminal reason to continue to wage a criminal war. I'm Matt Rothschild, and that's how I see it.
I was talking about the Republican debate. So we'll get to the point where we're going to drag a terrorist out to the stage with the Republicans, and they're all going to take turns kicking him in the nuts and see who the audience cheers for the most. That's going to determine who's going to be the Republican candidate. Because that's what they are. Kick him in the nuts. How do they do that on South Park? Rochambeau. They're going to Rochambeau the terrorists.
Come on, rub my nipples while I torture this little piggy.
No, that sounds pretty sweet to me.
The Cup of Joe radio show with your host, the working man's thinking man, Joe Vecchio. 11 a.m. to noon weekdays here on the Head On Radio Network, America's liberal voice.
Back to Dr. Bill, your passport, the perspective on the Head On Radio Network.
Thirty-eight minutes after the hour, this is Bill O'Brien. You're listening to the Head On Radio Network, and welcome. If you've just joined our program, we thank you for giving us a portion of this Friday afternoon. If you've been with us since the top of the hour, we thank you for being with us. Our call-in line number is toll-free. We encourage you to make yourself heard on the issues that I've been talking about or issues that strike you. We would love to hear from you. Our call-in line number, again, toll-free. 877-443-2366. Again, that's 877-443-2366. We were talking, if you've just joined us, a little bit about Michael Vick and a little bit about the outrage that people feel about what Michael Vick has done and apparently seemingly done. I think that there's no question in people's minds that he did indeed do many of the things that he is accused of doing. We talked about the contradiction in conservative talk radio, using specifically Neil Bortz this time because it's going on right now, that while he's engaged in a fundraiser for children with cancer in Atlanta, he is still spewing the negativism and the hate that has become so much the hallmark of traditional talk radio, conservative talk radio. It's pointed out to me on the chat line here that Rush Limbaugh does a radiothon for juvenile leukemia during the year, and many conservatives do programs for the homeless on Thanksgiving and Christmas and all these other times. And so the inconsistency, the contradiction, if you will, is clearly there. And that's the thing that concerns me the most, I think, and the reason that I raise it at all. I am encouraged by the outrage being directed at Michael Vick, because what it does is renew my faith in the idea that there are certain things that people will not put up with, that in spite of all the negativism and in spite of the fact that so many of us have had to pull in, if you will, withdraw, get that protective shell around us in order to protect ourselves from all the negatives that bombard us from every direction in today's world, that ultimately when something like this happens, you begin to realize that the best in people is still the best in people, because it comes out, and it doesn't come out in just a few. It comes out in the huge majority of people, even those that call themselves conservatives. In other words, good people are outraged by this. But at the same time, you have this situation where ideological mouthpieces, I guess you could call them, the Neil Bortzes and the Rush Limbaughs and the Michael Savages and the O'Reillys and the Hannitys and on and on and on, the Glenn Becks and all of them, you hear it's not only the best way to explain this one time is that somebody made a comment about my approach, my strategy on the radio, and basically what they said is, you know, you need, if you were going to improve, you need to call a spade a spade. In other words, if a spade is a spade, damn it, say it's a spade. And what they're saying is that I tend to not be comfortable with the kind of in-your-face kind of hostile, you know, toe-to-toe, curled lip to curled lip, eyeball to eyeball kind of confrontation. And my feeling is that gets nobody anywhere, and that what separates humankind from every other kind is the fact that, thank heavens, that our Maker gave us a brain, and part of the reason for that is that so we could find alternative ways to solve problems than that way, because they don't solve problems. All they do is create revenge and I'll get you later and all the rest of it. At least that's my feeling. So the criticism of me is the fact that I need to be a little bit more in your face, if you will, in some of these situations. But again, my sense is that that it doesn't get us anywhere. And I think that we're seeing in our national dialogue politically in this country the extent to which it's true. We tend to, at least what I see, is we're talking past each other. We're not talking to each other. We're not engaging each other in conversation. We're not participating in what we could call dialogue. That in reality, we really are almost talking past each other in too many cases. And it seems to me that's really part of it, in a sense. But what bothers me most about you know, the situation I was referring to specifically today, which is the Neil Bortz situation or the Rush Limbaugh, whatever example you want to use, is the fact that it's unbelievable to me that intelligent people don't see the contradiction that I see. That disturbs me. It disturbs me very, very much. Because there's obviously a contradiction. And basically what that suggests is that we're dealing with people who really don't connect dots. And I that phrase has become infamous, of course, with Condoleezza Rice and why didn't we anticipate 9/11? Why didn't we do something in preparation for 9/11 to avoid it and all the rest of it? And of course her very famous stuff, you know, that there was a lot of things there, but there was nobody could connect the dots. And I guess that phrase will go down forever. And as President Roosevelt said about the attack on Pearl Harbor, in infamy, especially with this Iraq war that stemmed from it. But the fact of the matter is, it bothers me that intelligent people don't see that contradiction and can shift gears. And such a dramatic 180 degree shift, as I heard in the last 2 days on Neil Bortz, to go from interviewing young children who have just come out of chemo treatments and actually break down. In a couple of cases, people on the program broke down because these children are so wonderful, and their strength and their willingness to fight is so admirable that it causes good people to break down. But then shift into something which is so negative and so hostile and so vile and so aggressive and so inhuman and so unfair in terms of attacking specific people and calling them names and all the rest of it, and see no contradiction in that, you have to wonder, either they don't want to see the contradiction or they really don't see it. And I prefer to believe the latter. And my sense is that they do not see it. And what that means is that they don't connect issues and events and see the similarities between them. Now, in the last day, since the president gave his latest address on the war to the veterans group in Kansas City, I believe, yesterday, where the president made the analogy between what's going on in Iraq and Vietnam. In other words, he made the connection that he spent the last 3.5 years denying existed, that there was anything to be learned from Vietnam that could be applied to Iraq. Now all of a sudden he's making connections, and we can go into his particular version of that. But the fact of the matter is there seems to be a disconnect. And I think it's a basic key foundational disconnect between conservatives and liberals. I really believe that liberals look for the links. Conservatives not only don't look for them, but are inclined to deny them unless they're, you know, unless they literally hit them right between the eyes. So I guess what I choose to believe is that these people see no contradiction between what they're saying and what they're doing. And that scares me more, because that's the kind of mentality, that's the kind of perspective that can cause people, good people, to totally separate one event or one action from another. In other words, you can be on some issues totally good and totally positive, and at the same time you can advocate foreign policy or political policy or military policy or economic policy or social policy that is downright almost inhuman. You know, I'm thinking of things like health care and all the rest of it, you know, and I'll just use one example and we'll take our break because I'm running a little bit over here. But I'll use one example. The very same people that didn't blink an eye last week when the Federal Reserve pumped billions, $36 or $38 billion into the economy in order to stabilize an economy and a Wall Street situation which seemed to be in turmoil. It was in free fall for all practical purposes. And everybody breathed a sigh of relief when the Federal Reserve and other large groups pumped money into the economy in order to stabilize the investment markets. The same people who supported that action see no contradiction between that and the assumption that to provide health care to poor people is socialism and is bad. What is wrong? What is the difference between government pumping billions into the economy to stabilize the investment market and putting money into health care in order to help children and poor people get health care that they have a right to? Where's the contradiction there? Why is there no contradiction? I leave that question, and we're going to take our break. We have a caller on the line, and we'll take our break for a moment or two, and we'll come right back, and we'll go to our phones. This is the Head On Radio Network. I'm Bill O'Brien. Please stay with us. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Head On Radio Network.
Sweetie, I love you, but those jeans have got to go.
Yeah, I know. Grab me a pair next time you go to the store, would you?
No.
Huh?
I'm not going there anymore. I can't stand it.
What do you mean?
It's just awful, honey. The only smile in that building is that big yellow face. Everybody else looks miserable, and I can't find anything there that's made in our country. That bothers me.
Well, nobody makes clothes in America anymore.
Au contraire, mi amigo. There's a ton of American-made clothing at No Sweat.
Well, where's this No Sweat store? Out at the mall?
No, silly. I found them at headonradionetwork.com. There's a link there. I already ordered some great workout gear, and I also got you some new jeans. They'll be here in a couple of days. Surprise.
Headonradionetwork.com?
Uh-huh. Just click on the No Sweat banner. You're right there. Helps union workers and helps support America's other liberal network. Cool, huh?
I knew listening to the horn was a good idea.
Whose idea?
Your idea, dear. All the good ones are.
Union made? No sweat. Great prices? No sweat. Great looks? No sweat. No sweat at headonradionetwork.com. Click the banner. Do the right thing.
Recently on the Guy James Show on the Head On Radio Network.
If you have tuned into this program by mistake right now, and you are a Republican, a right-wing Republican specifically, before this program is over, I do want to warn you, you're going to think that I'm the devil. You're going to think I've got horns and a red cape because I hate the Bush administration and everything they stand for. So be warned right away, okay? You're all warned right now. that's where we're coming from today.
Don't miss Guy James, weekdays, 3 to 5 Eastern Time, on the Head On Radio Network.
Now, back to the Dr. Bill O'Brien Show on the Head On Radio Network.
This is Bill O'Brien back with you. We're at 53 minutes after the hour, and you're listening to the Head On Radio Network. Let's go directly to our phones. We don't want to keep Andy waiting. Andy is calling us from Wales. Hi, Andy.
Hi, how's it going?
How are you?
Yeah, not too bad at the moment, actually. It's finally stopped raining here, so we've got summer again.
Oh, boy, would I love to have some of that rain. Go ahead,
no,
Andy.
You wouldn't.
Go to it.
Had. Trust me on this one.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, I rang up about the hypocrisy and the contradictions that you were drawing attention to. And I'd point out that in the case of Neil Bortz and in the case of the support of Wall Street, it's because it's all about fascism. Because we don't know it. Well, I know it, you know it, and a few other people know it. But the vast majority of the American public and the British public are completely unaware that the fascists won the Second World War and are in charge of our society. And that's, you know, you can kind of deny it if you like to, but the fact is that the people who run our world are fascist. They support the power of corporations and the super rich over the people.
Mm-hmm. There are, you know, and of course that was the common impression of the Second World War, of course, is that it was a war against fascism.
Mm. Well,
and apparently what you're saying is that it wasn't.
Well, no, I don't think it was. I mean, look at how the American ruling class paid for the Nazi war machine. They got rich off the Nazi war machine.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, you don't hear about IBM being prosecuted for them coming up with the system that allowed the Nazis to efficiently exterminate Jews, homosexuals, gypsies, Russians, Polish. You know, you don't hear about that, but IBM created the system that let them efficiently monitor, control, and execute millions of people. IBM.
Mm-hmm.
And how many people are listening to this show through an IBM-compatible machine?
Yes.
Exactly. You know, I will not buy anything from these corporations. I always buy from small companies. You know, you've got to steer clear of them because they're evil corporations and they are out to destroy us because they see us simply as slaves. They want America and Britain and all the other socialist countries. And as much as people might like to deny it, America was and still is to a degree a socialist country. You know, a socialist country is a country where society is the primary thing. Now, America's being turned into a complete fascist dictatorship.
Right.
And I'd argue that's been going on since the end of the Second World War.
What you're saying, if we put what we've been talking about into the context of what you're saying, Andy, then the question that I would ask is the obvious one. Do you think that those that you refer to as fascists know that they're fascists, or do you just think that they're doing what they have a right to do?
Well, it depends. I mean, who do you look at? Do you look at a Rush Limbaugh, or do you look at one of his supporters? I mean, if you're talking about his supporters, then they're simply misinformed. They've had many millions and millions, or probably billions of dollars spent on keeping them as a group misinformed.
Yes.
You know, they haven't woken up and seen the light, as it were, and they're part of the working class, but they act on behalf of the ruling class. If you're talking about Rush Limbaugh, he knows full well what he's doing. He's a paid-up member of the ruling class. I mean, he's not exactly important in the ruling class. They can find another Rush Limbaugh anywhere, you know. They'll drop him like a rock if they need to. But he serves a very important purpose. So there's, you know, Sean Hannity, Bill O'Reilly, the entire Fox News network.
You know, these are very, very significant people because they are the outlet for the belief system that supports exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah. I mean, they're, you know, they know what they're doing, and they know what they're doing is, I mean, often if you look at these people on TV and you see their eyes, they have a dead look around them. You know, they don't look like people who enjoy being alive. And the reason for that is because they're going against human nature. I mean, you know, people will say it's in human nature to go to war. I'd argue against that. Why does it take so much effort to get people to go to war?
Right.
Why do you have to tell so many lies about the opposition? Why do you have to create Gulf of Tonkin incidents?
You know,
why did 9/11 have to happen?
Conservatives deny the whole philosophical perspective which is based on the idea that man's natural state is peace and that war is an aberration. Their argument is that warfare and competition is the national standard. Yeah.
Yeah, well, it's all about making money, and it always has been. Go back to the Roman Empire and the empires before. It's always about a small group of super rich people who generally believe they're more than human beings. I mean, if they don't, they believe we're not even human beings. And these people always try, because they measure everything with wealth, they always try to control all the money and all the power. And look at how, you know, the Republic was bled dry until the Empire finally fell. And look at what's happening to your Republic now. The Empire is alive and well, and it's called the American Empire. But it's going to go downhill soon, because, I mean, look at its competitors, the Imperial Chinese. They might like to call themselves communists, but they're capitalist fascists, just as much as the American ruling class are. And they've got a lot more people to throw into any war than we have.
You know, it's interesting, the your use of the term fascist, because one of the programs that I've heard recently suggests that to talk show hosts, if you refer to conservatives as fascists, then that is a flag that the conversation has ceased, and now it's becoming a screamathon, if you will. When liberals run out of arguments, they resort to the idea of fascism. And what you're saying is right out of World War II and the basic element of fascism.
Yeah, I mean, I'm talking about the true basic what fascism is as a definition. I'm not talking about you're a fascist, shut up. I'm talking about
right. If
you support the ruling class, then you're a fascist.
Right.
Because the ruling class system is fascist.
The purpose of government is to support the corporate entity.
That's what the purpose of the fascist government is. And we can
exactly.
We can easily see that the British government is very close to that, and the U.S. government is absolutely in that. You know, I mean, look at the way they're trying to destroy anything that's even remotely socialist in your country. You know, Medicare and all these, like, you know, the No Child Left Behind thing that was created to make sure all children are left behind. You know, it's typical true fascism, because they're trying to destroy the method of information distribution through the school system. They want to make sure the kids are just intelligent enough to use a gun or a tank or an aircraft, but not intelligent enough to conduct logical thought and analyze what is going on in the world. And I'd argue they've succeeded to a great extent in the States.
Yes. Yes.
Because look at Hitler's Germany. You know, they had very good education results, in a sense, but they produced a lot of very well-educated little stormtroopers, didn't they?
Yes.
You could use a gun and a tank.
Where you're coming from, Andy, I think this is very, very important for listeners, is that you're making the distinction between the idea that the determination of whether a society is socialist or whether it's fascist is not based on how much government there is or how big government it is, but where government's priorities lie.
Absolutely. I mean, the size of the government is irrelevant. I mean, I'd argue that America now has the biggest government it's ever had.
Yes.
And that it only ever increases under conservatives. But that's because a fascist state tends to need a larger organization of bureaucracy to maintain control.
Mm-hmm.
An ideal socialist state would have very little in the way of government, because you don't need much in the way of government. You need an organization to control the military to make sure the fascists can't come and stomp all over you, and then the rest of government can be done at a local level, pretty much. Because let's be honest, that's where society operates. It operates at the local level.
So the idea of who receives the priority of government's largesse and support is the determining factor as the nature of the society that we have.
Yeah. I mean, I would argue
that
government is supposed to support the people, and a fascist would argue that government is supposed to support the ruling class and control.
And that's
people.
really the issue. So therefore, if government is headed towards too much support for the community and too much support for society, then the way to challenge that is not to point that out, but to attack the size of government itself.
Yeah. Well, the conservatives will use any lie they can. I mean, you know, the whole the government's too big, we've got to drown it in a bathtub, all of that sort of stuff.
Right.
You know, they don't necessarily believe anything they're saying. What they mean is the bits they don't like, you know, the bits that don't give money to the ruling class. And you can look at it, you know, where money gets given to Wall Street to stop a crash, but it doesn't get given to kids to stop them from dying of cancer or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that the key difference there is that if you give the money to the kids who are dying of cancer, then the ruling class don't get any of that money. And you can look at every decision that comes out of the U.S. government, and look at it in that light. Who gets the money? And it's true. Cui bono? Who profits? And that is the ultimate thing. You always look for who profits. And in every case, when it comes to the U.S. government, and pretty much every case when it comes to the British government, it's the corporations that profit. I mean, we have something here called private finance initiatives, mm-hmm. which essentially an investor will come along, say a corporation or a group of venture capitalists, and they will put up, say, £2 million for a school. And the government will come along and put in £18 million, okay? And a school mm-hmm. will be built, and the private group will run it. But if anything goes wrong and the school fails, it doesn't produce good results, the private group can claim reimbursement for up to 50% of the initial investment by both groups. So they can make £8 million just by investing in a school and running it badly.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for 1 year, that's not a bad return on £2 million, is it?
No, it sure isn't.
You have like 40 or 50 schools, brand new schools, that are failing.
Andy, I'm assuming that you're familiar with the conversation about healthcare in the States.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering, would you consider this in the same context?
Yeah.
Many of those who are supporting the need for reform in healthcare in the United States are have one thing in common, and that is that all of it goes through private insurance companies rather than direct universal health care paid by government through something like Medicare, where basically government aid goes directly to the patient. Most of the people who are supporting it now are talking about private insurance, and it seems to be very, very consistent with what you're saying.
Well, that's it exactly. It's a great example, because if you're putting money in, say you're paying your taxes and you're getting a national health service, then effectively all you're paying for is the running of the hospital and the actual cost of the drugs and treatment. So,
yes.
You know, you get a very good return. You've got maybe 20 cents in your dollar go towards the administration, and the other 80 cents go towards you being treated and the maintenance of the structure. But if you have a private finance group or a private healthcare system, then you pay your dollar over to, you know, some organization who say, oh, we'll give mm-hmm. you the best deal, and you have no real idea who'll give you the best deal or what will happen when you become ill.
Mm-hmm.
When you become ill, they might just decide that, oh, well, your family had a history of that, we're not paying out, and so you don't get mm-hmm. any money. I mean, look how hard it is to claim when, you know, a house is blown down or burnt down or there's a flood or something, you know?
Yeah,
insurance companies will always try to get out of paying.
Right.
And the reason for that is profit, because they don't give a damn about you.
Right.
Why should they? You know?
So, in other words, every situation, your inclination is to look for ways to turn that into a profitable venture.
Yeah, well, that's
including war.
And you can see it now. I mean, you know, what happens to a family, a middle class family where both parents are working? Why? Here's another point of capitalism. Why should both parents work? You know, why shouldn't we have a parent that looks after children to make sure they grow mm-hmm. up in a responsible way? And I don't give a damn if they're both female, both male, or one of each.
Yes.
You know, if people want to live in huge, great communal families of hundreds of people, that's fine by me too. But, you know, capitalism has driven us to the point where both people in a nuclear family have to work, otherwise you can't
yes.
afford to live. And if one of those people gets sick, and if the insurance company doesn't become, you know, very, very nice, which I don't think has ever happened, you know,
yeah.
one of those people is sick, that's it. The family's destroyed. Destroyed.
Mm-hmm.
They can't
mm-hmm.
pay their mortgage. They can't pay the medical costs.
Right.
You know, if the kids were in any kind of private school, that's all over.
Right. Andy, thank you.
I'll speak to you again.
It was just a pleasure. It was a pleasure, and I appreciate you sharing your thoughts with us and your time with us today. Thank you so very much.
No, thanks for your time. I'm the Head On Radio Network's resident socialist, so anytime you need a rant about capitalism...
I think it's great. I love it. Thank you, Andy.
Cool.
You made my day, my friend. Thank you.
Brilliant.
Bye now. We're at 7 minutes after the hour. Let's pause and take our top of the hour break. And that you're listening to the Head On Radio Network. This is Bill O'Brien, and we'll listen to some news at the top of the hour. We'll be back with our second hour. Please stay tuned.
This is the Quality News Network. Near the end of trading this week on Wall Street, the Dow Jones is rallying up more than 100 points. We'll have the latest numbers coming up in our business block. The U.S. military commander in the southeast region of Iraq says it would be a, quote, giant step backward to pull out U.S. troops from the region by the end of the year because the Iraqi forces are not ready. Yesterday, Republican Senator John Warner, just back from a trip to Iraq, said he recommended to President Bush that he start a U.S. troop pullout by Christmas. However, the L.A. Times reports today that the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, Marine General Peter Pace, is expected to recommend a large U.S. troop cut to President Bush. Pace may advise a troop reduction of nearly half because keeping more than 100,000 troops in Iraq through the end of next year would be a strain on the military. Also, according to the U.S. military, since the troop surge occurred, the number of Iraqi detainees held by the U.S. in Iraq has gone up by 50%. There are now 24,500 detainees, most of whom are Sunni Arabs. In Afghanistan, three British troops were killed by a bomb dropped from a U.S. fighter plane. They were taking part in a NATO operation against the Taliban. A Marine drill instructor in San Diego has been charged with 225 criminal counts of physically abusing recruits. Two other drill sergeants have also been charged in the case. NFL player Michael Vick filed his plea agreement today in which he admitted to bankrolling a dogfighting ring. However, the Atlanta Falcons quarterback denied that he bet on fights or helped kill pit bull dogs. He will formally enter his plea in federal court in Richmond, Virginia on Monday. In Jackson, Mississippi, the elderly Ku Klux Klansman, recently convicted of murdering two black teenagers more than four decades ago, was sentenced today to three life terms. More thunderstorms have hit parts of the Midwest, already soaked by rain. A strong storm went through the Chicago region late Thursday. Trees were knocked down and buildings were damaged. In Greece, massive wildfires have killed at least 15 people. Many of the dead were trapped in their cars. Thousands of acres of forest have been destroyed in more than the 150 fires which are burning. Some of those fires are burning out of control. You are listening to the Quality News Network. Science and business news coming up next.
Here's good news about your money. Monterey County Bank has won the Bauer Financial 5-Star Superior Rating for financial strength and stability, making it one of the safest banks in Monterey County for your money. It's nice to know your money is in a safe place, but there are even more reasons to bank with Monterey County Bank. They now have four convenient locations in Carmel, Monterey, Carmel Valley, and Pacific Grove. And Monterey County Bank is the oldest locally owned bank, now celebrating its 30th anniversary serving you. Here's another important point. Local businesses have come to trust and rely on Monterey County Bank's position as the county's number one SBA small business lender. Safety, convenience, and local people you can trust. That's Monterey County Bank. Stop in at one of our four branches and find out why you can bank on us. Monterey County Bank, SBA preferred lender and equal housing lender, member FDIC.
In the past year, sales of the so-called morning after pill have nearly doubled. That's after the federal government decision to allow anyone over the age of 18 to purchase the emergency contraceptive without a doctor's order, as long as they have proof of age at the drugstore. A study in the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition finds that fear of new foods may be inherited. The research involved twins who were questioned on their willingness to give new foods a try. A 17-year-old New Jersey teenager claims to have broken the code that ties the new Apple iPhone to the AT&T wireless network. He claims he is using the iPhone on T-Mobile's network. New York City taxi drivers may hold a two-day strike next week. They are protesting new technology requirements such as GPS and credit card processors. New home sales were up 2.8% in July, according to the Commerce Department. Sales improved in the West and South, but decreased in the Northeast and Midwest. In July, the median price for a new home was $239,500. Gold is trading at $677.50 an ounce today. Light sweet crude is trading at $71.10 a barrel on the New York Mercantile Exchange. And taking a look at Wall Street this hour, the Dow Jones is up 110 points at 13,346. The NASDAQ is up 28. There's always more at our website, qualitynewsnetwork.com. I'm Allie Dramoff.
Huell-Hauser.
You've heard the news. Now let's get behind the stories. Let's rejoin Dr. Bill O'Brien. The doctor is in.
This is Bill O'Brien back with you for our second hour. It's 13 minutes after the hour in the East. That's 13 minutes after the hour of 4 p.m. on this Friday afternoon, the 24th day of August. We welcome you to the program if you've just joined us. If you were with us through the first hour, we thank you for staying with us. The transition from first hour to second, of course, was a terrific call that we received from Wales, from Andy. The number of issues and the points upon which we would expand in that program and that call are incredible. But I want to thank Andy again if he's listening for the call, and I sure appreciated it, and I know that those of you listening did as well. We'd love to hear from you, perhaps a reaction to some of the things that Andy said. Our call line is available; it is toll free. And it definitely needs to be used, as Andy used it. The number, again, 877-443-2366. It's toll-free. Again, 1-877-443-2366. And I was just reflecting on things that Andy was talking about. And, of course, we went from here, there, to everywhere. And I think if you listen to the conversation, you picked that up. But the theme that Andy was talking about is very, very significant. And he talked about No Child Left Behind, and he talked about the approach to our educational approach in the schools in terms of what we want youngsters to know and what we want them to not know. But more specifically, it's not a question. I think Andy pointed this out. It's not a question of what they know and what they don't know. It's what they know and what kinds of questions lead them to things they don't know that they want to find out. I would suggest to you that that's the key issue in today's educational environment, whether it's in the public school at the grade school level or whether, in fact, it's at higher education level, is the extent to which questions are raised and people are encouraged to pursue answers to those questions. We were talking earlier before Andy called about the issue of connecting dots, about making connections, about seeing what to some of us are obvious contradictions between the positions, the political positions that some people take and their inclinations, whether it be politically or socially, whatever. In other words, there are people that behave and act in almost contradictory ways, yet don't seem to see the contradiction. And I think that's very, very significant. But again, if they don't see it, if it's obvious that they don't see a contradiction, then that tells us an awful lot about what's going on and what we have to do. We have to point out the contradiction. It is not enough to merely argue for the alternative position or issue. We have to do it in a way which forces people to confront the contradictions in their own position. Let's go back to our phones. We are at 16 minutes after the hour, and we have a call from Oregon. We have Chris. Hi, Chris.
Hello?
Hi, Chris. How are you?
I am doing fine. I called basically because, this whole healthcare system, and it seems like everything is caused from the nutrition, from basically what we're eating is causing the diseases. And the system is set up to not quite cure you, but keep you going until you die and then take everything from you. In other words, we need a health system that cares, not a healthcare system. And basically, I'm going back to what I've been reading about Dr. Weston Price going around the world in the 13 cultures that had no disease. And also the Nourishing Traditions cookbook by Sally Fallon that it says a cookbook that challenges the politically correct nutrition and diet dictocrats. And within this book, it has so much information about how we got where we're at, why everybody at Healthy Traditions either soaks all their grains before they make their food, they do lactofermentation, they do stocks that are full of gelatin that they eat. There's just so So,
Chris, your point is that the health care crisis in this country, and we'll focus on this country for purposes of discussion, that the health care crisis is primarily driven by what people eat and how they eat, and not not other things, whether it be environment or whatever.
From the research that he saw healthy people around the world, but that they started eating the processed foods, the white flour, the sugar, the canned foods, the things that, you know, white man was eating, they got diseases, their teeth would fall out, and to get cured, they'd go back to their eating their regular foods and shun white man's food, and they'd get rid of tuberculosis and other diseases that they had. So when it comes down to, well, what causes like tuberculosis, well, that example says that eating junk and not eating what you should. So, you know, that's not even brought out that, you know, from a nutritional point of view, somebody can't tell you the difference in a fresh squeezed glass of carrot juice and some stuff they sell in the store that's been cooked. You know, what? Not only what's in it, what's different, what does it do to your body? Nobody wants to talk about those issues, and then they claim they know what's going on. You
Chris,
know, if you get sick, go to a doctor.
And again, I'm asking a question primarily for clarification. I'm not necessarily taking issue with what you're saying.
Okay.
But I'm looking at this and I'm saying, I'm listening to what you're saying, and the thing that's going through my mind is, I agree with everything he's saying, but realistically, what chance do we have that people are going to abandon white flour, that people are going to abandon foods that aren't good for them, when there's a whole industry, a marketing industry built around encouraging us to eat things that aren't good for us? I guess, you know, how would you define a successful strategy to deal with what you know about food and good food?
Well, it seems like we can even take the presidential race. You've got Edwards and Kucinich, the two people that really seem to care about people, and they haven't even brought this up, whether they're ignorant or part of it. I'm not sure. It does seem like the whole, all the marketing and everything else is against anybody telling the truth on anything, to tell the truth on sex, drugs, rock and roll, what's really going on in Iraq, how we got there, what's going on in Afghanistan, where's Blackwater, how come they can go and have carte blanche, do everything they're doing with no law. I mean, it's like nobody's talking about anything truthful. $50 trillion debt, what was put up for collateral for this debt, those kind of things. You know, where's anybody talking about substance of what they'll do to you, somebody else they'll do to you next? I mean, truth,
so, Chris,
honesty,
are you suggesting that all of this dishonesty and unwillingness to own up to the things that are happening, for example, in Iraq and all these other things, is symbolized by the fact that we're not even being told what's good for us and what's not good for us in terms of what we eat? Are you seeing that as kind of an example of something that's gotten much bigger and is in a lot of other areas?
Well, I didn't hardly hear you. When you start talking, it's hard to hear you.
Okay.
It just seems that ever since it started, the first was that the manufacturing process runs everything. Everything is still done to keep people ignorant, to sell, to make more profit, profit motive in everything. And that just seems to be
health,
showing up in everywhere.
So the health of the people is never the priority?
Never.
Okay.
All
and
right,
so
well.
That dishonesty, if we can call it that, that dishonesty you're suggesting is symbolic of the dishonesty that exists and how we got into Iraq and the profit that private companies are making out of Iraq and all these other issues. In other words, you're suggesting this is all part of the same, you know, of the same story.
Oh, exactly.
Okay. I appreciate that, and I. What in the areas of food, what would you consider a good strategy, or what would you consider success? Obviously, people aren't going to start eating the way disease-free peoples eat. So I guess the question is, you know, do we become more knowledgeable about what we eat and what's good for us? Do we trust that science will come up with antidotes for the what we're doing to ourselves? I mean, what? How do we proceed?
Well, again, we have to go back to basic, like algebra. You have to have algebra before you go to calculus. You know, uh-huh. And then there's a lot of steps along the way. If we don't go back to Weston Price and his book on physical and nutrition and physical degeneration, which shows you that within generations, your children, their teeth will not fit in their mouth if you right. eat white man's food. And damn if your kids have to have braces and get dental and things like that. But can you imagine living to 100 years old and never being sick, never mm-hmm. having osteoporosis, being able to run fast at 80 years old and still enjoy life? You know, and that is the standard that was shown. And without mm-hmm. knowing that that was the standard, and why aren't we doing what we already know? You know, we mm-hmm. can, and then we go on to the misinformation, disinformation from those in power to manipulate and quote out of context and, you know, and shut down anybody who has a voice that is against them. I mean, it's been going on since when it came out. So, you know, that all the information of the man that showed the world how you should eat, you know, as examples, because he took him examples of all the food and looked at all the vitamins and everything else, and this is what healthy people ate. And now we got people today that are totally ignorant that this man even existed.
Yeah.
So we don't have to go to page, you know, 2 if you haven't even read page 1.
Page 1. So you're what flashed through my mind is the fact that McDonald's now has salads is not really that big a deal.
No. Everything is life. You know, we live by live, you know, enzymes. We live our bodies process food. As a matter of fact, this lady, the cookbook, it's with Mary Enig, Ph.D., and Mary is the lady that you owe gratitude for not having trans fats in your diet anymore. Because
mm-hmm.
she's
mm-hmm.
a biochemist, I believe, and it proved that from a cellular level, the damage that was being done.
Yeah.
And the, you know, the diet dictocrats and the people that, you know, their lobbyists could not argue. They had to fold. Now we don't have trans fats.
But Chris, have you read the stuff by Andrew Weil?
Some, yes.
Okay. I thought you probably had. I was wondering what you think of him.
I really couldn't comment on it. I haven't read it. I was a long time ago.
Okay.
I just know that natural good stuff comes from comes from the earth. I mean, animal fats are good for you. They're fabulous for you. And if you don't have them, causes problems.
Yeah.
You know, but that goes against the pyramid. That
but
again,
pro-
this,
but
you
processed
so, huh?
Processed fats is the problem apparently.
Fat
it's
from
the processing, yeah.
Well,
yeah. This is fascinating stuff, Chris. This is really fascinating stuff.
Oh, I just say get the book, Nourishing Traditions, and read it. I mean, you'll be blown away. It has so much information in it, and it's documented. It's just a fabulous, fabulous book, and the one before that I already mentioned. So, we've got to quit hurting our bodies with what we eat. And she explains why what they're doing and why it damages us. And you got to do it yourself. I think it was on radio where they had about thinning a cow to people in different locations because you give them milk. Well, yeah, that's giving them life. That's not sending them a cow so they can take the milk and send it to be processed so they can mm-hmm. send it back and drink something that's dead.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
that stuff doesn't make good cows, but live stuff right from the mama sure does.
Chris, the issue of exercise and you know, which everybody advocates, and I think what they're basically saying is the way you combat the fact that we don't eat right is to try to offset it with a lot of exercise. Are you at all seeing any link between the way you live and the way you eat?
I had a hernia about 3 years ago, and when I went in, that I was always scared about going in to see the doctors, and my blood pressure was high. He goes, God, this is high. It's like 160 over something. And I go, I don't like being here, but okay, fine. And so he gave me a blood pressure medicine and stuff like that, and he wanted to give me some medicine for my high blood pressure, and then I found, friends said, hey, if you want to have a good, healthy sex life, don't take that stuff because it doesn't help you. And so I said, okay, so I went more into reading, Fit for Life and learning about juicing and nutrition and stuff like that, and then I read, you know, these other books, and I started jogging just fast enough with my dog, just slowly jogging this about 2 mile loop, and my everything came down. I dropped 10 pounds. I only eat fruits and vegetables until noon, and I do have a juicer. Uh-huh. God, I don't have any fat on me.
Yeah.
I'm 55, 54, going to 55.
God, that's great. That is great. You're making me feel bad, Chris. You're making me feel bad.
Oh,
no.
This other stuff. I mean, Fit for Life is another book that if you God can read it, just he believes in bouncing, you know, like getting a rebounder. Because he says he believes that the bouncing is what gets your lymphatic system working. And that dumps all your stuff into your bowels and gets rid of it. So if you juice, you clean your bowels. And if you bounce, you move your lymph through your bodies and it cleans you. I swear to God by it.
Well, I'll tell you, Chris, I bounce. Hey, listen, I want to thank you for calling. This is really fascinating stuff. I hadn't heard that in this, but this is great.
Well, thank you for having me on the phone.
Listen, thank you so very much. I hope you have a great day, and I appreciate you sharing your thoughts with us. Thank you, Chris.
Well, thank you.
Okay. We are going to come back to our phones. Let's pause. We're at the bottom of the hour. It's 30 minutes after the hour, 30 minutes after the hour of 4, if you're in the East. Let's take our bottom of the hour break, and we'll come back, and we'll go right back to our phones. We have Sue on the line. You're listening to the Head On Radio Network. I'm Bill O'Brien. We'll be right back.
There's one place on the web you can go that's so topical, you can apply it liberally. WD40.com. WDYAD40.com. Claude Wally and Goofy are there. They're working hard every day to give you updates in news, politics, and a great sense of humor. So stop on by and see the boys at WD40.com, a place where you can raise your voice and be heard. WD40.com. Your one-stop shop for all things progressive.
From the Night Sound Studios, here's Charm City's very own, sassy and classy, Erica Richards.
Join us at Night Sounds every Saturday night at 9 p.m. to midnight Eastern for a unique musical experience. You'll hear featured segments like One Hit Wonders, Under the Covers, and Night Sounds dedications hosted by yours truly, Erica Richards. Oh, by the way, the contact email information that we gave out during our debut is not in effect. So, to request a dedication, please contact Erica Richards at billyshearsmusic.com. That's Erica with a K, and Shears, Shears. To reach Billy Shears, direct your email to nightsounds@billyshearsmusic.com. We'll be waiting for you this Saturday evening.
It must have been prayer meeting with Reverend Brother Bob.
See, hey, Peter, welcome to the program.
You absolutely know that you cannot mention Robert Sunday without conjuring me. This is a known fact.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Right. Well, sometimes I do it on purpose.
You know, the thing that kills me, you know, God just continues to punk Robert Sunday. After time, after time, and it goes back for years, you know. Let's talk a minute about his business venture. From 91 to 94, he was involved in something called CaloVita, and it was a multi-level marketing company that reaped that pyramid scheme.
Yeah, like Amway.
Sold beauty products and healthcare products. Oh, they had a product called Sea of Galilee Mud Mask.
No, they did not.
Oh, yes, thank you.
You no.
Bob, as a heart attack, I'm serious.
Sea of Galilee Mud Mask?
Oh, yes, it was part of the product line.
Prayer meeting edition of Head On with Bob Kincaid, Wednesday nights, 6 to 9 p.m. here on the Head On Radio Network.
Join the conversation. Call Dr. Bill now at 877-443-2366. Now, Dr. Bill O'Brien.
This is Bill O'Brien. We're back with you at 33 minutes after the hour. We've turned the bottom of our second hour. The time goes by so fast. The calls are fascinating. I want to thank you. I want to thank Andy. I want to thank Chris. Just fascinating. And the, you know, we were talking about connecting dots, and of course I've been sitting here thinking about links between Andy's call and Chris's call, and it's really interesting because obviously the fact that they followed one upon another suggests that there is a link, and I think that's the key issue. It's so wonderful to hear from you all. Our call-in line number is toll-free. I appreciate so much that so many of you are using it. It is 1-877-443-2366. That's 1-877-443-2366. Let's go back to our phones, and we have Sue on the line. Hi, Sue.
Hi there.
Hey, how are you?
I just had to call in. It's, you know, it's true that if you eat properly, you're going to be healthier, you're going to feel better, you're going to have more resistance to disease. However, all of the people in the Middle Ages did not eat processed foods. Processed foods were not available. Half the people in the Middle Ages died in the Black Death. Eating unprocessed foods does not exempt you from germs. If you run up against a germ with your name on it that you have no resistance to, it's going to get you.
Sue, do you think that the way you... I guess the question is it going to get everybody equally, or do you think that eating the way Chris was talking about is going to make us more resistant to
germs? It's going to give you more of a resistance to it, yes.
Okay, but of course, as you're pointing out, viruses and germs are pretty powerful, and we don't know a whole lot about them.
Yeah, and if you don't have any resistance to that germ to begin with, you will have a certain amount of resistance due to your healthy state, but once that resistance is used up, you're done.
Right, right.
Unless somebody comes along with an antibiotic.
Okay. So that raises the question, and I appreciate what you're doing because you've raised this fabulous question. So the question is, given the reality of what you're talking about, should we rely on somebody coming along always to find the antibiotic or the antidote to what we do to ourselves, or do we really need to kind of grab on and suck it up, as it were, and just begin to take more control over our own lives in terms of what we eat and how we live?
We need to do both.
Okay.
Because those diseases are constantly mutating,
mm-hmm.
always mutating. And always changing. So therefore, no matter what we do, we're always going to run into one.
Right.
Plus, your healthy lifestyle cannot do anything against a genetic disability, a genetic malformation. Like, I'm forbidden to eat healthy. I can't eat a healthy lifestyle.
Yes.
That will kill me because I do not have, I inherited a genetic defect that will not allow that. I can't metabolize food properly.
I see.
So, yeah. If you have genetic problems, all the healthy food in the world isn't going to help.
Right. Yeah, but... Is there medication or is there medicine or science that assists you in processing foods, Sue?
No.
Or there isn't?
No. so what rare condition, and basically what I do is I don't eat protein.
I see. Okay.
I exist on fats and starches.
Well, let me ask a question. What is your alternative to protein? In other words, is there an alternative that you take or that you seek? No.
I'm allowed 45 grams protein a day, which is about the size of a hamburger patty.
Uh-huh.
Anything more than that will put me into a coma. If I get really above that, it will kill me.
Well, what? Because you sound, I've got to tell you, you sound wonderful, and obviously you sound like obviously the picture of health. And so I guess the question is, I mean, protein, most of us get energy from protein. Where do you get your energy? Because you obviously have some.
Well, I'll tell you what my doctors told me. Eat sugar, Susan. Eat sugar. I walk around with a bottle of Pepsi at all times.
Uh-huh.
If I start to tip, if my metabolism starts to tip over more towards the burning of energy, which will mean that I'm producing more waste products and therefore more of what puts me into a coma, I start guzzling Pepsi.
What about weight, Sue? Does weight become a problem when you take that much sugar?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Now we're into it. Is there a way to control weight when you have to ingest so much sugar? Seems to me you're almost
short of major liposuction. No, gastric bypass is out because after a gastric bypass, you are on a permanent high protein diet. I can't do that.
Mm-hmm.
So
it sounds like
I'm screwed.
Yeah, I was going to say, it sounds like you almost have to, you know, reach the conclusion, hey, you know, you can't have everything.
that's basically it. Basically, I'm screwed.
But I just find it difficult to believe that they can't find an alternative to protein. Or they can't find a way to generate the production of, you know, find a way so that you can process protein. I just can't believe that. Is it because it's so rare that there's not, in other words, if 10 million people had the same circumstance, if 10 million people had what you had, would find it, wouldn't we?
Yeah, well, let me put it this way. This is rare enough that it took 3 years to diagnose me.
Okay. Okay. So you're sitting there listening to Chris talk about all this food and the idea of going back to cultures and societies where nobody ever is sick. And you're sitting there listening to this.
That's wonderful if they could do it.
You know, you're sitting there with a Pepsi in your hand.
Guzzling away, you know.
I think it's, I think it's wonderful. I appreciate so much you sharing this with us.
It's not just my issue. It's people with diabetes. It's people with MS. It's people with who had the misfortune, women who had the misfortune of being in the womb when their mothers took DES. And if you don't think that screws you up, you ought to Google it. It's all sorts of things. This, food will impact you enormously, and it can benefit you enormously. But it's not the be-all and end-all of all things.
Okay.
It can't be.
So, in other words, what you're saying, I'm taking some beautiful things that you've said and trying to condense them, but what you're saying is that if you take what Chris talked about literally, you're talking about the fact that many people can do that, but that there are a lot of people who can't.
Yeah, and plus, like, you know, one thing that he said that scared me, he said that his doctor put him on medication and he walked away from it.
Yeah.
Please, people, don't follow that example.
No, if you do that, you'd be dead.
He got away with it. Yeah. You may not.
Yeah. Yeah. That's one of those things which says, don't try this at home.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. But I think what Chris is...
doctor first.
I think what Chris has had is a miracle, and I mean this in a positive way, a wonderful experience where so many things have come together for him, and he's sharing it, and I appreciate the fact that he's sharing
wonderful.
It because he wants all of us to benefit. Right, right.
It's wonderful.
Right.
I'm just saying, for everybody, it's not the answer. I wish it was,
okay.
But it's not.
If you'll hang on, because I'm getting the word here that Chris is going to be back with us. And so he's probably got a few things to say in response.
Sure.
Is that okay?
Sure.
Listen, let me take a very, very short break. It'll be our last break today. And then we come back and we'll get Chris back on the line. Sue, thank you so much. It's a joy to hear from you. Thank you. We're at 44 minutes after the hour. Let's pause and take a quick break. And then we'll come back and we'll hear again from Chris. This is Bill O'Brien on the Head On Radio Network. We'll be right back. Harry Potter has given us all a unique glimpse at education the way it ought to be. Never once do Harry and his Hogwarts friends talk about skipping class, ducking tough instructors, waiving requirements, or shirking responsibilities. That perspective, be practical, get it the easiest, fastest, cheapest way you can, is what J.K. Rowling terms the Muggle approach to education. We're Concord University, and do we have a deal for you? At Concord, education's different than anywhere else around. There's a reason that Concord students get the best jobs, are sought out by the best medical, graduate, and law schools in the land. It's no wonder that Concord has been cited by U.S. News & World Report and by the Wall Street Journal. Where do I sign up? At Southern West Virginia's version of Track 9 3/4. All you have to do is believe, and believe in yourself. Concord University, an education you can put to work. 1-888-384-5249.
As I understand the conflict right now between the president's bill and the one supported by the Democrats, John McCain and Lindsey Graham, is that John McCain and Lindsey Graham and the Democrats say that the bill, the standards we use, should be the standards that are the same as the treaty we signed, the Geneva Convention signed after World War II that every civilized nation follows. And the president is saying, that restricts me too much. That's too humane. I want to be able to do other things. I won't say what they are, but sources tell us that things like waterboarding, you know, drowning people, putting them in 50-degree weather. And the question, I think, is should we hold the United States to the same standards that England holds itself to, that Canada holds itself to, that other civilized nations hold themselves to?
Get the view from inside the Beltway with Mark Levine on the Radio Inside Scoop. Right here, 2 to 3 p.m. weekdays on the Head On Radio Network.
At this moment, more than 800 million people are hungry. Millions more live in poverty. And you wonder, what can I do? Join the thousands of caring people who let Heifer International be their helping hands in the world. Right now, from Appalachia to Zimbabwe, Heifer is helping thousands of families become more self-reliant through the gifts of livestock and learning. Heifer provides farm animals that produce milk, eggs, and other products. That means milk to drink and products like cheese to sell. Having income means families can have better housing and health care, and their children can go to school. And recipients share their success, passing on the gift of their animal offspring to other families in need, ensuring dignity, self-reliance, and hope for the future. Find out how you can make a difference today at heifer.org. That's HEIFER.org.
Thank you.
back to Dr. Bill, your passport to perspective on the Head On Radio Network.
This is Bill O'Brien. We're back at 48 minutes after the hour. And this has been the fastest 2 hours in the last couple of weeks for me, I've got to tell you. It's been wonderful. And we're not done yet. And I say that with anticipation because we've got Chris back on the line. Hi, Chris.
Hello, Dr. Bill. My comments basically have to do with when you look at a culture, and they did at the time, there wasn't a history of any disease. I mean, going back as far as these cultures were at, and these were not just cultures around the world, everywhere, because there was death and disease everywhere in the world except in these cultures. So if there wasn't death and disease in these cultures, that's why we look to see what they were eating. And like, let's say to a vitamin A, where we say you should take 5,000 units, they took 50. But they weren't taking any kind of pill. This is the foods they were eating. They ate all kinds of fresh foods, shellfish, things that were high in everything that we think that we don't understand. They also prepared their food to make sure that it was for healthy generations, for healthy babies. So, no, in these cultures, there was no disease that was stronger than them. There was no virus, and there was always viruses. There was no bacteria that could eat them. There was nothing unless they started eating processed foods. And within that is they ate organ meats mostly raw that repaired organ meats, organs that we have, sort of like cures like. If you could, and they ate them raw. They protected themselves with vitamin C by eating different parts of animals, you know, raw. There's just so much wisdom in each culture doing what they needed to have what it took to have perfect babies and fabulous health. And since each one was so different but all the same, that's the thing that showed you that there wasn't anything. But as soon as they quit eating the food that had kept them healthy for centuries and started eating flour, sugar, you know, canned foods, they started getting sick and dying, and you know, just like the rest of the world.
Right.
But just because you live in a place that doesn't have processed food, it's are you eating the amounts of A, B, A, E, D, C, you know, C, all the different things that you need to keep it so that your body is, you know, the awesome man, woman that you can be, and, you know, the rest is like, well, heck, we're way below those levels now, and look what's happened.
Yeah.
So that's my rant.
Okay, but so Chris, what you're saying, I'm thinking of what you're saying in light of what Sue said. Sue raised the issue of a virus or bacteria that would make a healthy person sick, and